Welcome to Investigating Angel, an Angel rewatch podcast where we analyze each episode of Angel the series with no spoilers. We are your hosts, Leia
and Sarah,
and if you love Angel, this is the podcast for you.
Hey guys, welcome back to Investigating Angel. Today we are talking about season one, episode 8, I Will Remember You. And today is really special because we have Tabby and Leah with us, our first time ever having them on my podcast, which is kind of funny because it feels like we're just recording for Becoming Buffy with Leah here because it's the same format and everything. But thanks for joining us, you guys. I'm really glad you're here.
Yes, I'm sure everyone is thrilled to hear our voices again because they haven't heard us enough. They're like, oh, they're back. Great.
It's like we thought we got rid of them. We only liked Sarah. And then now we're like,
not even a season in. They're like, oh, come on.
They love you guys.
We do. What have you been talking about? So for those of you who are not listening to us over on Becoming Buffy, Tabby and Leah are my co-hosts over there. And also, I don't think I say this enough. So a lot of people, like, I get so many DMs like months later, people being like, oh, you're sisters. That makes sense. So Tabby and Leah are my sisters, and that's why we sound so similar. And that's why we get on each other's nerves. Yeah.
Definitely seals the deal.
This is fun though. Like, we've never been on Investigating Angel, and it's fun to like get to see you guys in your like work environment, and we get to come and shite all over that. So this
will
be fun.
No, and what an episode for us all to be here together. I Will Remember You, which it blows my mind every time I think about it, that the most Bangel-centric episode ever is on Angel. But it's also kind of fitting in a way, you know?
It's also literally the most saddest ever. Like, oh my gosh. It kills me.
But before we get into that, today is also a special day. Even though technically this isn't a Becoming Buffy episode, I consider it kind of a Becoming Buffy crossover event. This is our, Tabby, Leah, and mine, our 100th episode that we've ever recorded. And I feel
insane.
That is a big deal.
I mean, we definitely have recorded more than 100.
I'll say this, maybe 107 if you include all the 7 times we had to do Teacher's Pet.
Yeah, we had to do like Teacher's Pet like 7 times. We had to do like, I think we had to do all of season 1 twice.
Yeah,
yeah, something
like around
that.
There. And then there's like a few episodes here and there that we had to do twice. But yay, our but episode
recorded and uploaded. Let's just say that
100 either way, successful episode.
Thank you. That's what it is right there.
Yeah, successful.
And I feel like it's fitting that it's this episode, like of all episodes, it's this one. And like, what a beautiful conclusion in a way. I'm not going to fully go there to Buffy and Angel's relationship arc. And that's something that like we've been talking about for now 4
conclusion
seasons.
Dang, could you imagine it's if our 100 episode was like Where the Wild Things Are or something, just like some awful episode? Like, that'd be so embarrassing to be like, oh,
we're like, yay to us, 100
episode.
Buffy's
Where the Wild Things Are. I'm so happy I don't have to watch that episode.
You and have I'm all of a lot of other
so
episodes.
Happy that you guys,
yeah, you got some other ones you guys gotta go through though.
It'll be a while before we get there.
Oh, it comes faster than you think. It comes fast.
Leah suddenly like,
as a superior veteran looking back,
as an elder podcaster
in this community, I'm like literally the youngest.
So I Will Remember You, written by David Greenwalt, Janine Renshaw, directed by David Grossman, and it aired November 23rd, 1999. So this episode is number 78 on the TV Guide list of TV's top 100 episodes of all time, which is pretty crazy. And I think it should be higher, but that's just me. Angel is one of those heroes who flourishes on frustration, Peter S. Spiegel says, and he's American novelist and screenwriter. He says he thrives on never achieving his heart's desire. This episode in which Angel relinquishes the chance to have a normal, happy life with Buffy in order to fulfill his penance perfectly typifies Angel's character and fate. Noel Murray of the AV Club likes the premise, but not the whole execution, writing, "It is an undeniably sweet episode, but I have to say I found the setup clunky and the complications a little forced, no matter how beautifully it all plays out." In Entertainment Weekly's list of the 25 best Whedonverse episodes, including episodes from Angel, Buffy, Firefly, and Dollhouse, I Will Remember You is placed at number 14. This episode was rated the series' best episode in a poll done by Angel Magazine in 2005, which is actually insane because it's the first season.
I mean, I will say, I don't know if this is the best Angel episode. I mean, I think it's definitely my favorite, but like there are some good episodes in Angel, but I would definitely say it's top five at least.
Yeah.
I'd say story-wise and overall like tightness, people are going to get so mad at me, I think 5x5 is better, like as an overall story, just like, I don't know, like they're both just so good. But I think this episode is really good because we love both Angel and Buffy, and there's a lot of emotion into it because of that.
Or some of the episodes in season 5 are really good. And like, I don't
a
know.
Hole in the World is
I just feel like, and I've only seen Angel once, so it's like I'm not qualified to pick, you know, episodes out of my butt and be like, this is better. But like, I think that calling this the best Angel episode is a bit of a disservice to the show, only because the show has so much more than just Angel and Buffy. And I mean, obviously, like, I love Buffy, I love Angel. Like, we have a Buffy podcast. Like, I stan them both. And this episode's amazing. I just don't think it's the best Angel episode.
I think it depends on what you're using to define best episode. Are you saying character moments? Are you saying acting? Are you saying story? Are you saying, sometimes the best episode could be one that pushes the rest of the series further. And I think this episode is a turning point for Angel, this series. And so a lot of people, when they're saying best, like we would not have the rest of the show if it weren't for this episode in this moment. So like, I think obviously that's why you have just this one site was like, this is the best one, you know, other sites will say it's 14 or whatever. So I think it depends on your criteria.
I definitely think it's like, this is a great hour of television. Like it's a very entertaining hour of television. And I think I've seen Angel a few times, like the entire series, and we've covered 7 episodes already, and a lot of them have been not that great. So I feel like I can see like why this wouldn't be the best episode, like in general of the entire series, because I can think of a few others that I think I feel like I can't pick my favorite episode, but this would be among them. Just because I think it's just such a great like hour of television that you don't get in other episodes of Angel. It's not like a filler episode. Like, I know some people probably think like, oh, you know, this is just a one-off episode or whatever. But it is really important still, but it's not like a monster of the week episode where you just kind of forget about it. Like, you remember this episode as you're watching the series, even if they do or don't bring it back up ever again. So I think in that sense, it's very memorable, and it's a great, like, I don't feel like I wasted my time watching this. Obviously, because I love Buffy and Angel also, so, like, I want to see them more. But just in general, I don't know, I think it's just, like, great.
Well, and I also think, at least from what I can remember about Angel, this episode, and I'm not trying to spoil anything, so if this is too much, Sarah can just either tell me to shut up or help me out. But like, from what I remember, this episode does a lot for Angel in the future. Whether it's said or subtle, I think that this episode not changes, but motivates Angel's character a lot.
I think it's important to have an episode like this, especially I'm so thankful that we got Sarah Michelle Gellar in this episode, because if everyone's watching the start of Angel coming from Buffy, they've seen Angel from the viewpoint of Buffy, right? Which is why we fell in love with him. We love him. Like, we love that side of him. But he's always kind of been Buffy's boyfriend. But I think that going into his own show, they needed to separate him from Buffy because he needed to have his own reason to fight. He needed to have his own, like, purpose in life. And I think, again, I'm so thankful that we actually had Sarah Michelle Gellar because they could have shown that in some other ways throughout this season, especially in season one. But having her in and really kind of going into their relationship, they really, like, steered into it in this episode. And we're all so thankful for it because, again, they could have, like, half-assed it and then, like, focused on, like, him trying to, like, figure out what his identity is outside of Buffy and other small ways. But, like, this really just kickstarts Angel and then Angel the series.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, it feels as though the entirety of this season has led to this point, to this moment. And a lot of times I think about In the Dark, the episode where Oz and Spike come and Angel has to give up the Gem of Amara. And it was kind of just like the first step. And this is the real test here. And he has to once again give up. I mean, the gem was just a synthetic version of what he actually has with Buffy in this episode. And so it feels like the tests just keep ramping up and Angel keeps having to choose, okay, what do you really want, Angel? Is redemption worth giving up all of this stuff? And not just that, Angel is not just giving up Buffy in this episode, but he is holding on to and owning his redemption and his role as a warrior, as a cause for good for the not, we'll say the first time, but like fully for the first time. This is him. Like when he says to Buffy at the very end, he tells her, you know, it's not worth the cost of your life and the life of others and the lives of others. So he's thinking outside of just their relationship, and we'll go into it more in a second. But Critically Touched says, this episode is also important in how it puts a final spin of closure on Buffy and Angel's relationship. Sure, the reasons for the split were listed and explained in Buffy the Vampire Slayer in the prom and graduation day part two, but there was no sense of resolution, just Angel walking off into the mist. Still having felt in his right to sneak around Buffy for her better interests in Pangs, it was clear that Angel believed there was still an obligation for him to fulfill despite his leaving Buffy. The rules, in quotations, of the breakup weren't clear enough, and for Angel to carry on in his mission and Buffy to move on with Riley and her life, this episode had to happen, which, you know, is fair. And I think that's why this episode is so good, because it pulls together so many different things and it builds on three seasons of a relationship with these characters, but it's deeper than that. It's deeper than their relationship, right? It's for the first time Angel fully owning his role in the world, and that's apart from Buffy for the first time.
Yeah. And also big old bat freaking screw you loser to Riley, because literally without a second's thought of having Angel, there was not a breath thought for Riley.
Yeah.
And
they're in the start of everything too.
I feel like the fact that this episode exists is like part of the reason that Riley wasn't very well received by like viewers.
Oh, yeah.
Because how do you like watch this episode and see Buffy react the way she does to a human Angel and then just like watch her go back and start whatever with Riley, knowing that like if Angel was an option, she wouldn't even look twice at TA Riley. Like,
and I think that is that's the closure that I need. That is what I need to know.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to go back to the show and watch her with anybody else after this, going, man, you are not her first pick, and everybody knows it. And you know, even though Buffy doesn't remember this day, you know, which is kind of good for her, because I would feel really bad for her to have to go on and move on with anybody else after knowing fully what it was like to be with Angel for a day. I'm kind of glad that she spared that to a certain extent.
I don't know that it would have been realistic for her to like ever move on.
Yeah.
Like I still haven't moved on. I don't even
Yep.
I don't think Buffy would have been able to.
All right. that's the end of my introduction, because there is a lot to talk about in this episode. I think I say that every time. There's always a lot to talk about. But this one in particular, it just kind of rings you out in an emotional way. So we're going to go ahead and jump right in. So from the opening notes, you can tell this episode is going to be special. There's something about the music. It's very haunting, sorrowful, mysterious. The clock, it feels very symbolic. You know, it says it's 8:53 and we're like, okay, what does this mean? So Angel's here winding this clock. Cordelia and Doyle are watching him from the side room. And we realize that Angel just got back the night before from being in Sunnydale, where he was helping Buffy out in Pink. So this is right after, which feels significant. Cordelia and Doyle are worried that Angel is he seems to be fine. And Doyle's like, well, okay, that seems normal. Like, why are you like freaked out about this? And Cordelia's like, no.
This is literally, I feel like this is how it feels, like, as a Buffy fan talking to someone who is not a Buffy fan, like, who's a new viewer. Like, Cordelia is, like, every Buffy fan ever. They're like, this is not normal. He's supposed to be like this. And then Doyle's, like, every new person watching the show who's like, I don't know what's going on. Like, this seems okay.
He's over her. What's going on? What more could you ask for? I love that she says, batten down the hatches. Here comes Hurricane Buffy. See, it's moments like this that I'm like, Cordelia knows Buffy. Like, she seems to know Buffy in instances like this and understand what Buffy's going to do. But then I have other instances where she says something about Buffy or says something to Buffy. And I'm like, wow, you just don't know her at all. So sometimes it feels like there's a cognitive dissonance in how they write her. Sometimes it seems like she's like in this episode, like when she's really, really snarky, I'm like, you know the history, Cordelia. Like, why are you acting this way? It just doesn't make sense sometimes.
I also feel like they kind of set Cordelia up, or Chris McCarpenter up, in a bad light, because she seems extremely sympathetic to Angel and to Angel's feelings and what Angel is feeling towards Buffy. But then anything that Buffy is feeling towards Angel, she doesn't really validate. I mean, we have that scene at the end where, like, Buffy's like, hey, like, where's Angel? Like, I don't understand. Like, and Cordelia's just kind of, like, snapping off at her. But it's like, you know that if Angel were to ask, like, Angel asked her at one point, like, hey, can you go tell Buffy this? And she immediately does it. She doesn't question it. She doesn't talk back. Like, and I get it. She's closer with Angel now. But it's also like, it does. I just don't understand why they have to continue having Buffy and Cordelia not get
along. It's very weird.
This is something I talked about in, like, we talked about in Room with a View. It's just, it's so frustrating to me. Like, it, I don't know, maybe it's good because I've seen this show so many times, and just seeing this happen over and over again is just, it's just frustrating. And it just kind of makes me roll my eyes whenever Cordelia opens her mouth. And I just, like, it's just not, and I know that it's not the character herself, and I know it's, like, the writing behind it, where they're kind of pitting them against each other constantly. And like I said in Room with a View, like, this happens throughout the entire series every time Buffy is brought up, and it's just like, why? I feel like, you know, you have people being like, oh, well, they have a frenemy type of relationship, and this is how, you know, it's just for laughs or whatever. But it's like, they got past that on Buffy. They got past that whole thing. And then in season 3, they brought Cordelia right back to hating Buffy for I don't know what the reason is. So I don't know. It's just very, very frustrating to me. And I, like, hate it.
When I'm watching a TV show and they have a character, a female character that doesn't get along with women and they don't give a reason why, I really hate that, because that actually happens in real life. There are some girls that just have a hard time getting along with other girls, but it's usually because they're just not very good people. They tend to be the backstabbing type of people. We know Cordelia isn't that. So when you perpetuate that stereotype and that harmful thing that happens in real life, also just as a, like, a trickle effect. So it's like, if we represent women on TV who can support other women, but also be strong, also be straightforward, also be just, like, badass, like how Buffy and Cordelia are, both of those girls are those things, and they can still share a same space with each other and love each other, that's what we need to see. Yeah. I want to see women, and, like, show us what we're supposed to be doing. Like, if I can be all these things that are amazing and awesome traits in a woman, and someone else can, we can share the same space. We can love and support each other.
That's a really good point, because I feel like in this show in general, they do that a lot with Cordelia. And I just don't understand it. Like, I don't understand why it has to be this way.
I don't even see it, though. I don't even see that in her. That's the thing that's so frustrating. It's like, it feels like it's just written in.
I know what you're trying to say, Tabs, but there's a difference between something being out of character, and then there's a difference between someone, like, this is what the writers are intending for this character. And I know, like, it's hard, but it's really hard to say, sure, I don't see that in that character. It's 100% frustrating, but like we've said before on Becoming Buffy, to say that, like, we're angry at the writers for writing it this way because we don't see that in Cordelia, and this is a consistent pattern that's happening over and over and over again.
I do see it in Cordelia.
Yeah, I see it in Cordelia personally. Yeah. And that is because the writers wrote it that way. So it's fair to be angry at the writers for writing it this way, but then also being like, I want Cordelia to be more than that. You know what I mean? I think it's unfair to say, I don't see that in Cordelia and it's just the writers writing that, when it's the writers that are creating this character.
Doesn't Doyle even call her out, like, at the end of the episode, jealousy? Where he's like, he's like, jealous? Like, and I mean, I wish it was more than just like one word of him just kind of being like, wow, you're jealous. I wish it was him being like,
the script Cordelia, did have let it more go. Information.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it did.
I wish they cut kept it though, in.
But I think they would have kept it in. Yeah.
All the scripts recently on Buffy have been keeping out all of like the important parts. I'm like, guys, this would take 2 seconds.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. The thing that I'm frustrated, and I don't like, it's an episode about Buffy and Angel, we're talking about Cordelia, but we'll just get this over with now. The thing that I find frustrating with this episode is Cordelia instantly, the moment that you have it about Buffy and Angel, Cordelia instantly gets relegated to the role of, I'm going to be the narrator. I'm going to tell you where we've been.
And it's unreliable information that she's giving. I'm sorry, everything that she says, the majority of it, is like incorrect.
It's almost as if the writers used her as a voice to try to help sever the break between the audience and the relationship of Buffy and Angel. Like, let's use Cordelia to tell us all the reasons why they shouldn't be together. And it makes it really frustrating, not only for those of us who love Buffy and Angel, but it makes it frustrating because that's not fair to Cordelia's character. Once again, she's relegated to no better of a role than she was in season 3 of Buffy. Remember how we talked about constantly she's there to just tell us what happened the episode before or to sum up the episode. And it's just, it's not fair.
I think I just want to add one more thing to this Cordelia thing. For me, I find it really hard to reconcile Cordelia's behavior a lot of the time because I'm not shown why she acts that way. You know, we've talked about this, Sarah, on this show, but it feels like with Cordelia, we don't really know much about why she is the way she is. We don't know much about her backstory other than superficial stuff like, you know, her parents were rich and then they lost everything and blah, blah, blah. But we don't know why Cordelia is a mean girl. We know why, for example, I'm going to bring Xander into this. We know kind of why Xander maybe acts out the way that he does because of his home life and certain things that happened maybe in his childhood that made him act, like, makes him act the way that he does, also being a product of the time and all of that. But with Cordelia, it's like, you don't, like, why is she so mean to everybody? Why does she feel that she is allowed to just say whatever she wants whenever she wants and think that that's, like, okay? And, like, I get it, like, that's what we like that about Cordelia. She says what's on her mind and she owns up to it and she's like unabashedly herself. But it's like, I don't know. It gets really frustrating to me because I feel like she's like overly mean at certain points and overly rude to people. But I don't know why she's acting that way.
So Angel pulls out a stake and they're like, oh no, he's suicidal. And I was like, that is quite an extreme reaction for him just sitting there like, clearly you can tell what he's trying to do. He grabs the pencil and is trying to see if it's rolling down his desk. But oh, so funny. And I think it's hilarious that not just Cordelia thinks that, but Doyle as well. Like, he's feeding off of Cordelia's energy. Like, oh.
Yeah, he's just going along with it. It's so ridiculous. Like, why would Angel kill himself because he saw like Buffy? He literally left her a few months ago and he was fine. Like,
And Cordelia says, no, you can't let her get to you like that. You'll meet someone else. You've just got to give it time, which I do like that interaction. I like that she's kind of trying to comfort him in her own way. So then Angel kind of gives them an overview of what happened. He says, it wasn't a social call. I was there to protect her. I stayed out of sight. She never even knew I was there. And Cordelia's like, really? And you could tell there was so much in that really. It was like a, wait, that's a stupid idea. And are you sure she didn't know? And Angel's like, you know, look, Buffy will always be a part of me. That's never going to change. She's human, yada, yada, this whole spiel. But it's really funny how David Boreanaz communicates it, because it really feels like Angel's just going through the motions and saying these things to try and convince himself that it truly is over. Both Buffy and Angel do this in this episode, and it cracks me up because you can tell they're just trying to protect themselves.
I do like what Cordelia says in this scene where she's like, you know, if my ex came to town and was all stalking me in the shadows, yes, I'd be like a little upset. Like, that's definitely a fair thing of mm-hmm. her to say. And I think it kind of lets us see that Buffy does have a right to be kind of annoyed. Like, yeah. Buffy has every right to be a little bit annoyed.
And I really loved that, because I felt like it was Cordelia sticking up for Buffy and also putting herself into Buffy's shoes in that moment. I was like, yes, this is the Cordelia we need to see more of. So it was like,
yeah,
it was
seriously, a good someone moment. Who just is like an advocate for everyone's emotions and just for truth, not necessarily just for herself.
So right off the bat, you know, hearing all of this stuff, you immediately, as a first-time viewer, are like, okay, so this episode is going to be about Buffy and Angel. And I think you can kind of tell because of how things left off in Pangs. Like, it was very much like, this is not the buildup it was, like, supposedly, like, leading us to believe it was going to be. Like, it was very obvious that Buffy and Angel needed to meet. There's still things they need to talk about. And this episode is pivotal because you know immediately the series needs to address the big Buffy question, mainly because it was Buffy who even set Angel on his path in the first place, and it's clear he's not over her. So this episode needs to accomplish two things going into it. It needs to reiterate why Buffy and Angel can't be together, and it needs to make it final enough that Angel has to move forward, which makes it really hard when you're watching it, because you're like, okay, I know there's 5 seasons. There's no way that, like, Angel's going to stay human, you know? So,
yeah. It should have been, like, the last episode of the entire series.
Could you imagine?
I would
be down with that.
My God.
You would be down with this episode.
But then I'd want
last?
A different ending.
Yeah, different ending.
I was like, what?
Different ending. It ends.
That's what I mean.
When they're laying in bed. Like, that's final scene. They're laying in bed. I wish, and Buffy's dude. Like, This is the best I've ever felt, like, whatever
just
she says.
Tack that scene onto the end of Chosen, and I would cry.
Yeah, no.
Oh, my God.
And it closes. Wait, it zooms in on her face, and she just smiles, and then it goes black. Oh, could you imagine?
No. Here's my beef, too. Sorry, you
can write the fanfic. But
I have never understood how there was a literal alien species, or whatever, demon species, that Angel could track down and literally cut himself and put his blood in there and be like, I'm human.
My biggest criticism of this episode is the fact that the Mora demon is just like,
it's just a demon. More it's tangible. Them. It's tangible. So yeah. I've never understood how I'm like, how would Angel not be like, you know what, Buffy? You do your little thing for a while. Mm-hmm. And then towards the end of like season 7, he's like, you ready yet? I could be human now. Like, I just give me a few months to track down this demon. I never understood that. I was like, why do you need to, you know, have this big hellish battle when you could just track down one demon?
Yeah.
Never made sense.
I think there's like a lot of points in even just Angel the series where a Mora demon would have been like very useful to be around.
Yes.
Yeah. But apparently they just like couldn't, I don't know, it was just like a one-time occurrence.
Gosh, we can only find a Mora demon when it literally jumps into our living room. Like that's the only yeah. time you can
oh,
find
oh, we can
one.
Only find a demon that literally seeks out warriors.
And it jumps into his workplace. Like, are you really, guys?
Like, are
really?
You telling me that Buffy and Angel were never in a room together again?
He sniffs out warriors, but chose only that one time.
Yep. Yeah. It's and that's the thing. That's why I don't see this as the best episode of Angel, because you have the contrivance of that. You also have like Angel, and we'll talk about it, but like Angel suddenly being like, no, I'm going to leave Buffy sleeping. I'm going to go do this by myself. I know narratively why they wrote those things in there. They had to get from point A to point B. They have to have certain points, but it's kind of weak. But we still love it because of the emotional impact of this episode.
Yeah, you know? It's the emotional impact of this episode, definitely. Yeah.
Okay, so there was a moment in the script. So it says, they turn, Buffy stands in the doorway. And then typically in scripts, unless there is a specific reason for someone wearing something, they don't really specify what kind of wardrobe they want the actor to be wearing, but they write down what they have Buffy wear. They said, wearing one of those lovely peasant blouses. And I was like, why? That seems like such a random article of clothing for them to have her wear. Like, why would they have her wear that? So I just did like a quick Google search because I was like, I don't know, we'll see what happens. So the peasant blouse style originated from Romania, and I feel like that's intentional. Yes,
like the Romani. Yeah. Like the, okay,
yes. Yeah, from where the Romani tribe that Jenny was from, the ones that cursed Angel, that style of a blouse that she's wearing originated from there. And I was like, okay, either that's a freaky coincidence, but they included it in the script for a reason. So there was obviously a visual they had in mind for Buffy, and it ties into the story. So I don't know. Thought that was interesting though. Yeah. All right. So Buffy is shooting daggers at Angel and is like not happy with him. Cordelia is like trying to mitigate the situation. It's like, Buffy's here in town. What brings you here? And Buffy says, I came to see my father, which I was like, I'm not saying you're lying, Buffy.
She's lying.
But to our knowledge, you haven't visited him since the summer after she killed the master.
Nobody wants to see Hank Summers.
No. I don't think Buffy wants to see Hank Summers. Literally the day after Angel gets back to town, she's here. This is no quinkadink.
No. Coinkadink.
Quinkadink. This is no quinkadink.
No quinkadink.
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 No, oinky honky tonky. This is...
Moral of the story is Hank Summers does not know that Buffy is in Los Angeles. She didn't even tell him. She just came here straight to Angel's office.
So Cordelia hastily introduces Doyle, then drags him out of there and is like, we'll leave you two alone. So then Buffy immediately turns to Angel and says, you can see me. I can't see you. What are we playing here?
I love that the torment is that like she can't see him. Like that's what's torment. That's the torment. Yeah. Like,
Not a... I want you out of my life forever. The torment is the fact that I have to see you again. You know, no, the torment is that I don't get to see you. Yeah, it's very intentional. So this entire conversation, I think Buffy does have a point. We mentioned this in Pangs. Angel should have let Buffy know he was there. He should have talked with Buffy. He should have informed her that she was in danger. And I think it's even worse that he told all her friends and not her. I think that's an extra layer of hurt. But I get the feeling that while Buffy is upset with Angel about this, I think there's a deeper issue here. And I think that's heavily implied just even in her body language, the way she's holding herself. She doesn't want to let him in, and she's using anger as a shield to protect her emotions. And I find it so relatable, and it makes her so human in this moment.
And I also just think that she's still mad about him leaving. And so I think that overall, she's just mad about him constantly making decisions about them and not consulting her or not like talking to her. I think that's what it really is about, is the fact that Angel keeps making these big decisions. And I don't necessarily disagree with them, but she's like, dude, like, I'm here too. Like, let me decide.
I think it's multi-layered. Like, I would be pissed if he just showed up, and it's almost insulting. Like, him being, it is insulting, actually. He shows up, and this is her playing field. Like, this is her job, right? Like, she's like the warrior. She made him a warrior. And then he's like, oh, I have a vision thinking you might die. And I'm just gonna sneak around and then just not tell you, talk to all of your friends, and like basically save your life and then just like disappear. Like, I'd be so upset about that. I'm like, just, like, my goodness, if you're going to come into town and help me if I'm going to die, like, I'd like to know so I can watch my back. Like,
like legitimately physically watch her back, because that's how she would have died, you know? Or maybe if he had just let her know, maybe she could have saved herself. Like, it's just, it's so like, I don't know. I'd be very upset too.
I feel like I understand, just to play devil's advocate, obviously, because Angel.
Very nice.
I understand why Angel wouldn't tell her from like a, we just broke up and I don't want to upset her by having her see me. And like, I understand why he would do that. And I think he also did it for himself, because it was like, he didn't have to interact with her. He wasn't in her way. She wasn't in his way. They don't have to say goodbye again. And I think he was more thinking from like an emotional standpoint rather than, you know, I know Buffy can take care of herself, because he knows that. Like, he knows that Buffy's very capable, and he knows that, like, he could have called and said, you know, you're in danger or whatever. But I think he had to go to Sunnydale because it was a vision. Like, he couldn't just ignore that and not go if it was sent by the powers that be. Should he have told her that he was there? Yeah, I think he should have. But I also understand why he didn't, just because I think he was trying to protect himself and her from having to, like, see each other again and have to say goodbye again.
Yeah, and I think it's a little unfair to say that he's continually making these decisions without her, because I think this is the first time that he's done that. Because, like we talked about in the prom, him breaking up with her, he doesn't need to necessarily consult her. Like, could you imagine how weird it would be to be like, hey, so I'm thinking of us breaking up. Let's talk about, like, that decision. Sometimes that happens, but sometimes it's, hey, like, I need to do what's best for me, and I know that us being in this relationship isn't what's working. We talked about it in the prom. But also him leaving Sunnydale, at that point, they were no longer in a relationship. That's not something that she needs to give input to. So I don't think it's fair to say that he's continually making these decisions. I think him going to Sunnydale and watching her in pangs is a decision she should have been informed in. So, yeah, I think I agree what you're saying there, Leia. And I think in this conversation they have right here, Angel, even like to his credit, he apologizes. And he tells her he respects her decisions. And then he says, I'm sorry if I handled it wrong. What else was I supposed to do? Which I feel like is the absolute best way to handle this situation. Because Angel's going, hey, I'm trying to handle this as best as I thought was good in the moment. And what is it Giles always says? He says, like, we're trying the best we can with what we have. Like, there's no handbook, like, no mystical guidebook. Like, we don't know what we're doing. So that's what Angel's saying he's doing in this moment. And then he asks her, what else was I supposed to do? And I don't think he's saying that snarkily. I think he's genuinely asking her, like, hey, what are we supposed to do? And then she says, I don't know. And so this is them both just like feeling their way. That's what Giles says. We're all feeling our way. We're trying to figure out what's the best move. And sometimes we mess up and we hurt people. But the thing that matters most is, do we come back and say, hey, I'm really sorry I hurt you. That was not my intention. What can I do better? And so I really appreciated what Angel said in this moment, because I think that shows, like, this is a very mature and a really grown up way to handle a breakup and handle this whole conversation. And yeah. I really love it.
Yeah. Like I said before, I think like his decision to not tell her was very like emotionally driven, and not very like, he didn't take the time to think of like what he should do logically, because like you said, like, this is the first time they're seeing each other post a breakup that neither of them wanted to have. They're still trying to kind of figure out how to be around each other.
Right.
And this is a situation where he had to go to Sunnydale. Like, he couldn't just, he wasn't just going to ignore the vision and be like, oh, Buffy, like, you're in danger over the phone, blah, blah, blah. This is what the vision said. Like, he actually had to go there, and he was probably just like emotionally driven not to tell her because he didn't want to. I believe Angel when he says, I don't want to distract her and I don't want to make this worse for her. But at the same time, had he just stopped and like thought of this like logically, he would have been like, okay, you know what? Like, she deserves to know that I was there because she is like my equal. Like, I needed to let her know. And I agree. Like, I think it's great that he like acknowledges that and she acknowledges that as well. Which is, I think, something that they do well. Mm-hmm. They make mistakes and they act like complete clowns sometimes. Yeah. But like, who doesn't? But it's just, it's like owning up to it and like just apologizing for it, I guess.
I agree. I also think there's a whole metaphor that's happening in this conversation that I didn't think about until I watched it this time. So the way the series started was with Angel skulking in the shadows trying to protect Buffy. That was his first job. That was the first thing that got him out of the sewers. That was the first thing that got him out of eating rats. That was when he was sent by Whistler. So she's literally here to tell him, you've moved past that. I've moved past that. That is no longer your role. And this is so important. There are so many parallels to past parts of their relationship. And I think that's really important because Angel needs to know and see that he's moved past that because it's time for him to find a new mission now. His purpose that he tells Whistler and his desire to become someone started with protecting Buffy. And I think that it's really important to see that they're trying to shift that narrative. So we have to have repetitions of the pattern in order to show that they no longer work. They've moved past that. And that's why Buffy says, I'm a big girl now. Like, she's older now. She's not, how old was she? Like 14 when she was first called. Like, she's not little anymore. She's a full-fledged adult, you know?
15.
Was she 15? When he first saw her? Okay. Yeah, I can't remember.
But I mean, either way.
So Passion the Nerd was talking about the body language of this moment. Like, you have Buffy crossing her arms like she's holding herself. It's like a self-soothing protection way. And Passion the Nerd says, this behavior started at the end of Buffy season 3 as Buffy repeatedly tried to push Angel away. Post-painful breakup communication is often defined by a rigid avoidance of vulnerability. Not revealing an inch of your wounded heart feels like it can stave off the chance of further bruises. To his credit, Angel does not engage with Buffy in quite the same way because she's a little biting in the way that she talks to him. Says Buffy's defenses here seem cold, but when the episode's turn occurs, they crumble and reveal the ache and desire she was keeping hidden. And I love that. From a storyteller perspective, you have to kind of see past sometimes what they're actually saying and recognize what they're trying to say or what mm-hmm. they're trying to keep from saying, you know?
Well, I think she kind of, even in this scene in the office, before it cuts to Cordelia and Doyle, you can kind of see her being like, oh, like, wasn't that you protect, like, lurking last night when I was in danger? Yeah, and she kind of like cracks a little smile. So it's kind of like her resolve is slowly starting to, or sorry, her like shield is slowly starting to come down. Mm-hmm. But then obviously it comes back up in like the sewer. But there's like a little moment even here where mm-hmm. it's like this understanding where she's like, okay.
All I know is that I feel you inside of me. It's just funny because she's trying so hard. Anytime we see them together, they're like 3 seconds away from kissing each other.
Oh my God, always.
But I love it though. I feel like it's good because you can tell that like they're always drawn to each other. Like even when she's yes. mad, even when like yes. they know it's dumb, like they're always drawn to each other. And I love that.
I feel like this episode shows that a lot is like even – I think there was a quote by David Boreanaz one time where he was like, they connect whether it's – in the middle of an argument or like on the battlefield, like they have a connection and this like unspoken like thing between them or mm-hmm. what was the quote? I wish I could find it. But anyway, it was something along the lines of like they connect whether in the like heat of an argument or in like the middle of battle or like in the middle of like, I don't know.
They connect.
That was a fail sentence that I just made.
It's okay. And it's a real connection, Leia, not like one of those fake ones.
Not like
from,
dope leak.
Oh my gosh. So Buffy says, I don't know. I just know that when you're around, whether I see you or not, I feel you inside and it throws me. And we know this. That's what I know Pangs is problematic and it's got some issues, but the best thing it does about.
She notices him.
She knows every time he's in the episode. And my favorite thing about that episode is that we as an audience don't know why she's acting the way she is. We're like, wait. And then Angel will appear around the corner after she leaves. And it's just really cool to see how she senses him no matter what's going on around her.
So question for you guys. Why do you think that she can sense him? Do you think it's because of when he bit her in graduation day? Or do you think that it's something else? Because I feel like they started really talking, like showing this after the bite scene. And we know that she has a scar. from his bite that hasn't healed. So I feel like the two are maybe somehow connected.
I think that Buffy has always had an awareness of Angel. I mean, she has an awareness of vampires in general.
Yeah, I was going to say.
But I think it's almost like a smell. Like, it's like she is familiar with the way that he feels. But I think that she's always been aware.
I think she's always had unawareness of him, but I think they did show that in season two, because I'm trying to remember exactly, but I think there were moments that she could sense him. But then I remember us talking about how as soon as he turned into Angelus, she didn't notice him him around anymore. Like when he was stalking her in the Bronze, there was that lack of an awareness. So I think there's always been on some level, some part of her that's always known when he's there. I think it might be amplified now because we haven't seen it to this extent. But I think she's always felt it.
I think what really, with this episode, it's because when he's human too, like he's not a vampire anymore and she can still sense him. She kind of knows that he's around. So it's just an interesting thing that they added into the show.
She's sensing him and she's like, oh, Angel. And it turns around or she turns around and it's the master. And she's like, what?
Oh, my God.
Because it's just because of the bite.
Well, the bite is Angel's bite. It's not the master's.
He bit her the same place that Angel bit her.
Right, but the master's bite didn't scar the one that she has on her neck now. It's Angel's.
Yeah. I prefer to be Angel's, not the master. I'm not saying I have to get into that. Yeah, no. Could you imagine? No, thank you. So Buffy's like, all right, we'll just stick to the plan, keep our distance in time. Hopefully we'll be able to forget. And the way they both hold each other's gaze when she says, yeah, they're both like, yeah, that's not going to happen. Neither one believes that. So she turns to go. The Moira demon jumps in. There's a fight. And okay, I'm convinced the Moira demon is secretly the biggest Bangel shipper there is. We don't ever really learn his full agenda other than he just wants to kill warriors or something. My theory is he was actually crashing in because he was trying to help them get together. And then that's why he takes off once they're on top of each other. He leaves mission accomplished. There you go. And kiss.
He's a Bangel matchmaker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my theory.
He's like, that's why he's mad when they kill him. He's like, are you guys for real? I'm trying to help you.
I gave you everything you want.
He did what say more do you are want? More powerful together, or you were powerful
he's
together.
He's a full-on Bangel shipper. He's over there you guys are meant to be together.
Angel turns back the day. He's furious. He's like, are you kidding me? I did all this for you to just go back?
So Doyle and Cordelia are in the process of leaving the place because Cordelia's they're going to be at it for a while. I do like that Cordelia knows the MO. And they hear fighting and Doyle's concerned. He's like, should we go back? And she's like, oh, no, this is the Buffy and Angel show. First, they talk out their differences. Then they punch them out. And she's like,
since when have they done that, though? When did they ever punch out their differences? I don't understand.
I think Cordelia sometimes conflates Angel with Angelus. I think sometimes she can't tell the distinction between the two of them. I don't know.
It's just weird. I was what? Since when do they punch their differences out? They've never fought unless he was Angelus. So I was this is wrong, Cordelia. You're wrong. This is the first time in this episode that you're wrong.
You need a buzzer button that goes every time she says something. So Buffy and Angel, this scene is really hot when Buffy gets up off the floor and they get really close. Their faces get really close and they kind of pause for a moment. And then they're like, no, okay, focus. They get back up. I love that Buffy says, friend of yours. And he's never saw it before. And she's it was rude. We should go kill it. And he goes, I'm free. And I was like, I bet you are, Angel. Could you imagine if he was booked for the day? He'd be like, Cordelia, cancel all my – oh, wait, she's not here. Okay, whatever. Let's just go.
Oh, please. They don't have any clients. Who are you kidding?
Cordelia's going to charge Buffy. She's going to be like, excuse me. You're taking up time. Oh. Yeah.
Have you seen that TikTok trend where people do stuff and then they show them their phone and it's the tip thing? That's Cordelia. She shows her phone and it's literally just like a tip service
20%
thing.
Tip.
Yeah, yeah.
Angel's like, oh, shucks, we have to spend the rest of the day together. Okay, all right, here we go.
I love this little exchange because it's just they make a great team and it's they just had this very emotional conversation and let's both forget and all that. And then they get attacked and like automatically they jump into like, okay, mm-hmm. we have to go find this thing. We have to kill it. Like, let's get mm-hmm. on this. It's almost like they forget the conversation that they just had. And I love scenes that like show how good of a team they are.
They fall just, into like strength so wise
and like, they kind of like, no, yeah, like it's like, okay, we're going to put that aside right now and we're going to go find this thing that's like obviously trying to kill us. Let's go.
Yep. And unfortunately, if we know anything about slaying from Faith, slaying makes you more horny. So poor Buffy, like after now having to fight, she's like, great, this is unbearable.
Hungry and horny.
So there is a whole scene that was actually cut up from the script. I don't know if you noticed that, Leia. It's the one, it's all about Doyle and Cordelia getting iced mocha frappuccinos. Oh, and it's basically a rundown of the Buffy Angel relationship where Cordelia is the narrator. And she talks about it. She says, one time they kicked the daylights out of each other at the mall. I was too embarrassed to shop there for like weeks. And then Doyle says, it must have been good sometimes, like trying to like focus on the good of their relationship. And then says Cordelia shrugs. At first, he was just hanging around the shadows, spying on us. Boy, a lot's changed there, huh? I was seeing someone at the time, so I guess he sort of fixated on her. What does that mean?
There's actually no way. Like, who is this lady?
Was she saying that he would have been attracted to her if she wasn't seeing someone?
Of course.
Someone? I'm so
Cordelia
confused.
Chase, of course. Like,
oh my word.
Leia's like, I'm so confused to what is happening.
I know. I'm like, is it always like this on Angel?
This is in the script.
So this then is Doyle a cutscene. It's not like in the episode.
Yeah. So then Doyle says, and eventually they got together and Cordelia says, did they ever on her 17th birthday, which kicked in his knowing a moment of true happiness curse, and then it got really ugly. Doyle says he went bad, tried to kill her. Cordelia says he tried to kill everybody. You weren't really going out much after dark in those days. Then she ran him through with a sword, sent him to hell. He popped out 4 months later, which was like 100 years of torment in demon time or something. His hair's never really been the same.
Yeah, it's better, Cordelia.
Yeah, it came out looking better. Then Cordelia says, then they went on again, off again. You sort of need a scorecard at this point, but finally they broke up for real last spring. That's when he took off for LA, the story thus far, which I see why they cut this out. There really was no point in knowing mm-hmm. all of this. Like, you can tell there's history without having to know the exact history. Plus, we saw most of this in flashbacks in right. City of as well. So... But yeah, they cut that entire thing out. Isn't that crazy?
And also, if you don't know the backstory, go watch Buffy.
Yeah. Leah's like, I have no time or patience for this. No,
but I mean, for real, like, I don't understand how anyone could watch Angel and not go and watch Buffy.
Yeah.
It just, it really, it's, they're two halves of a whole picture. They really are.
So then Buffy and Angel are in the sewers, which again, this is a clear parallel to their breakup scene in the prom. I think Buffy even references this. She says, you know, I really didn't want to have another, what, difficult conversation in a sewer or something like that. Angel mentions that he can smell its blood, which is cool because later on in the episode, they talk about or they show Angel being repulsed by blood. Oh, and then Buffy says this line which cracks me up. She says, maybe if your crack staff hadn't run off at the first sign of trouble, they could have done some research, found out what it was and why it was trying to kill us. And I'm laughing because
how Sunnydale of her.
Leia and I have been dying over how Cordelia, mostly Cordelia, does absolutely nothing around the office, and Angel's constantly getting frustrated with that. He's like, Cordelia, like, I pay you to work. And Buffy comes in and is like, your crack staff.
Oh, yeah, she, like, leaves.
Yeah.
I thought about that. I was like, shouldn't they be like, oh, okay, since Angel's busy, like, maybe we could just go do paperwork or something. But they go and, like, drink.
They just
like,
go.
I'm like, yep. Is he still paying y'all for this?
Watch the phones. If that's okay, we're just going to go out for, like, a three-hour lunch.
What if someone calls? Like, come on. Yeah. But that's pretty much how Cordelia's been the entire season.
And it was her idea to start this agency in the like first place. Like, I don't understand.
This woman, man. So then they have like this argument about a steak and whether Buffy should have a steak or whether she should have something else. And they're kind of just like nitpicking at each other.
They're kind of bickering. And it's just.
Yeah, they are.
It's. I kind of like it. I don't know if I'm weird for liking it, but I don't know.
Why do you like it?
I just think it's like kind of cute how they're like bickering.
It's the tension. There is so much tension going on right now.
And that's what like what Leah says. Like even in moments like this when they're like bickering and they're kind of, you know, like throwing shots at each other and like being passive aggressive and stuff, like it's still just like so you can still see like the connection between them.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I love even scenes like this where he's like, what did you think you were going to do with that steak? And she's like, oh, well, you've got your like fighting axe. What are you going to do with your fighting axe? And like, it's just like, I love it. I don't know.
Yeah. It almost feels like, you know, they both have their roles and their jobs now and they've had their lives separate. And so then they're like trying to criticize like, well, you're not doing your job very well. You could do it better like me. And like, it's this idea of like, our worlds are different. And so trying to emphasize that difference, but it's just not working. Like they still gel way too well. And then Angel finds the blood of the Moira demon. He touches it, sniffs it, and then he starts to kind of feel funny. But Buffy interprets this as, oh, you're feeling weird because I'm here. And she's like, okay, good. I can finally tell you how I'm really feeling. And so she goes into this whole thing of like,
I love when Buffy rants. I love when she just like goes off on like a little rant.
I like how he lets her rant on this whole thing. And it's just like, you can tell it's like he like needed her to be the first one to say it.
Also, I think it's cool that he opens up as well, too, because he could have very easily been like, oh, you're so silly. Like, I'm over this, like, you know, and kept his guard up. But he allowed himself to be vulnerable as well and threw her a bone, which I think shows how much he cares about her.
But can we just talk about how Angel's like, I mean, I meant like the demon's blood. It's powerful. And he's just like touching his
fingers.
He's
so awkward. I love how awkward Angel is.
He keeps touching it. We're like, we don't know what this does. And the fact that he feels weird.
The demon's blood, actually, that's what it was.
And they like skirt right past it. And we're like, let's talk about our feelings instead of like the fact that Angel feels weird on a physical level. Like, yeah. So Angel says, it's confusing when we're apart. It's easier. It hurts every day, but I live with it. Now you're right here and I could actually reach out. And then he steps even closer. It's more than confusing. It's unbearable. The framing and the lighting in this scene is so good. They have her standing in the light right near the entrance, or I guess the exit up from the sewers. And he's still kind of in the shadows. And so it's very symbolic of like, he can reach out and touch her, but if she just backs up, she's in the light and he can't touch her. Like, she's almost tangible.
I also feel like, I mean, you guys can definitely call me out here, but I definitely feel like Angel the show became real lax with the whole daylight rule.
Yeah.
There's so many times. I mean, even this episode when, like, the demon breaks through the literal glass window.
Angel's fighting him in, like, the full sunlight.
Yes. Angel's literally rolls over and is literally right underneath the window.
Standing there.
I'm like, shouldn't he be dead? Like.
Yeah. We've come a long way from Joss being so angry that Angel's in one tiny sliver of light in Welcome to the Hellmouth. And now where he's like standing full.
I feel
in
like
the
with
window.
All the minute details that the Buffyverse really focuses on, I really feel like this is one of those things they just don't care about. I'm like, you guys, this is the biggest lore in the whole show.
There's also mirrors. Like, you can see Angel sometimes in like windows.
Really?
On this show. There's a scene. And was it City of, it was in Lonely Heart, where he's fully, like, walking outside and it's, like, light out.
Yeah, they had some issues with some of the lighting. But, okay, you guys know the iconic shot in the credit scene for Angel when he walks in the alleyway and there's that puddle. You can see his shadow in the puddle every single episode in the opening credits.
Like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's very clearly, like, his reflection. But, you know, whatever. So that's the whole, we have to bear, right? No, I can't give you a life or a future, anything a real girl would want. And they're like still drawing near. And it's such a picture of
chemistry is amazing in this scene. Yeah, it's that invisible thread that that acting coach was talking about that they have, where it's like, it's literally like a thread that's pulling them together, but you can't see it. And it's like so, I don't know, they just have amazing chemistry. And you can like really see it in this scene. Just the way they like pull closer together and closer. And it's almost like they're like forgetting their words. Like they're like mm-hmm. hypnotized by being close to each other. And it's so good.
So then Buffy has this habit of when she is hurt, she lashes out and she kind of tries to hurt other people, or she just says things that I don't think she truly means. She says, you know, I'm on the brink of something back home. I'm actually heading towards a pretty good life now that Angel says I'm out of the picture. And it's like, I love that Angel, he rarely ever reciprocates when she lashes out at him, because I think he intrinsically knows what she's trying to actually say, and he knows that she's not actually angry at him. And I really love that, like, he just lets her vent at him. Like, he's her safe place to vent. And I think that is just beautiful.
Well, and I also think that ultimately it's just her being like, it's not about Riley. It's not about anything. It's genuinely about, I think, her just being like, I'm finally at a place where my whole life isn't wrapped up constantly
in something I can't have
you. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that it's just like one of those things where it's like, she's just like, I can't get sucked back into this because it's all consuming. Yeah.
And it's painful. And I don't want to live like that. I get it. It's exhausting to have to live that way. Yeah.
I think when Buffy says, you know, I'm on the brink of something back home now that, I think a part of it is also like she's gotten to a place where she's not completely devastated over him leaving anymore. Like, she's getting better, and she's no longer like, you know, hurting maybe as much as she was before. So I think it comes from like that place as well, because I don't know that she was trying to say that like I'm getting to a better place now that you're not around. I don't think that that's what Buffy was trying to say to Angel. I think that that's what he, like, jumped in because that's what he thinks. Just because I just don't feel that she would ever, like, say that. I don't think she would ever, like, imply that because I don't think she feels that way.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that he says it, not her. I think that's how he feels. And that's why he left ultimately, right? He was like, man, I'm the one dragging you down. So she's just coming at it from a, I can't have you and it hurts thing.
Yeah, like I think
it's hard.
That's how I read like her saying that line. She's like, yes, she's lashing out, but I don't think it's, like I said, I don't think it's lashing out that like my life is better now that you're not around. It's more like my life is better now because you left and I went through that pain of you leaving, and I'm at a place now where it doesn't hurt like it did, you know, right back then. And it's like my life is getting like better. Like I'm feeling less pain from you leaving.
So Buffy's like, hey, what if he went up? And it's like so metaphorical, symbolic. And he says, into the day where he knows I can't follow. Again, so much metaphor, so much symbolism. Buffy says, but I can. So she goes up and he says, I don't want you to go after him alone. She says, look, it's better all around if we split up and I can handle it. He tells her to go to the dive near the beach. And then she leaves. And it's funny because when I watched the scene, I expected automatically to follow Buffy as we go. Because over on the show Buffy, we always follow her. And Angel, we rarely see.
That is true. Himself. I didn't even notice that when I was watching this. I remember like in my mind being like, oh, what's Buffy going to do? Like, because I mean, obviously, like we go through Buffy. So it's like that's just naturally where it's used to. And I remember thinking when it was on Angel fighting the demon, I was like, when does Buffy come in? Like, when does Buffy come in and save him? Because I thought for some reason that Buffy was the one who came in and saved him, because I'm so used to that like format.
Yeah, we're always following Buffy. And it's usually like when Angel was on the show, it was like they'd come, they'd talk, Angel would leave, and we continue with Buffy, and then Angel meets up later. But this time we actually follow Angel, not Buffy again. And I think so many people, and this is really, really, really important to keep in mind for this episode, and we will talk about it at the end of the episode for sure. So many people's biggest issue with this episode can very easily be explained away by the fact that this episode ultimately is not about Buffy. Buffy is definitely a big key factor here, but this is Angel's show. This episode is about Angel's journey. And so when Angel makes certain decisions and the writers write certain decisions for Angel, it's important to keep in mind that they are specifically trying to progress Angel's character forward. And so we are focusing on him, and that's where it should be. And I think that's really hard, like having watched Buffy for 4 seasons, you know? So got to keep that in mind.
Yeah, I think that's such a good point to make, because I feel like if you're coming into the show and you're not really a big fan of Angel's character, it's understandable that you would be looking at it from mm-hmm. like Buffy's POV. Mm-hmm. But this is Angel's show, and these mm-hmm. writing choices are for Angel the character, and like you said, to like progress his story. When mm-hmm. you switch that perspective and look at it from that side, it's like mm-hmm. completely different. And I feel like a lot of people have a lot, like there's like a lot of criticisms that, like you said, can be explained if you just switch your POV. Like, just put yourself in his shoes, because that's where you're supposed to be mm-hmm. if you're watching the yep. episode, like on this show, right? So yep. that's like a yeah. really important thing, I think, that changes the entire outlook on the episode, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. The music is so full of suspense in this moment, like even just leading into it, like we're just waiting for something to happen. We know something's going to happen. So Angel fights the Moira demon, gets his hand cut, ends up stabbing the Moira, but gets the demon's blood mixed with his, kills supposedly the Moira demon, falls to his knees, kind of in like a mirroring of what happened to him in Surprise and Innocence. And then we have like this like glow coming from inside him, and then it kind of just like goes back, and we're thinking, oh no, he's gonna lose his soul again. And then we hear his heartbeat. So Doyle and Cordelia come back to the office, broken window, upturned furniture, signs of a big fight. And Cordelia sees a pile of dust and is like, oh my God, she killed him. And I was like, Cordelia.
I never believed Ooh. That line. I was like, girl, come on. Like, really? Really? Really, girl, sit down. Really.
She's like, oh, I just forgot to sweep under the rug. Like,
also, like, if you really thought he was dead, that's your reaction.
It's insane that this is the second time this episode that she thinks Angel is like either going to stake himself or has been staked. Like, does she just equate Buffy to like Angel's death? Like, I don't understand.
Cordelia's got some issues. I think she does, because then there's the plant. And she shows the yeah. dead plant, and she's like, man, wherever she goes, death follows and stuff. I'm like, okay, Cordelia. Anyway, that's a whole other episode. We need to stop talking about Cordelia. So the door opens. Angel comes in from the front door, not the sewers. And Cordelia does not clue in at all. She's like, what happened? Did you do it with Buffy? Doyle instantly knows what's happening. Cordelia's jumped to some drastic
she's
conclusions.
Like, you came in from
episode.
The front door. You have an umbrella.
Yeah, I'm like, what?
Who pinned Cordelia this episode? To be honest, she sounds so
I
dumb.
I don't fault Cordelia for immediately being like, did you have sex with Buffy? Because, like, they were
not
gone
that
for
umbrella.
A long period of time.
They would umbrella, all be yeah. dead if Angelus was out yeah. right now. He yeah. would. Yeah. Angelus would walk in and announce that he was Angelus. He'd be like, I'm back, bitches. And, like, you would know it was Angelus.
And Doyle's like, no, Cordelia. He's alive. And he talks about how they were attacked by a demon, their blood mixed, Doyle's feeling his pulse. And I really like that Angel immediately is like, I want to find out what this demon is, why he was after us. I want to find out like what this magic does. Like, he wants to know for certain what the consequences. He's so used to there constantly being consequences for things. And I think that's really smart, instead of just being like, hey, yeah, there won't be any side effects to this. Like, I can't possibly be human. Like,
it's very similar to how he reacted to the like Gem of Amara too. He was just yes. like maybe I'm not going to put it on right now. And meanwhile, Doyle's like, to his side saying, oh, put it on, like, let me stake you, like, just trying to make it all about fun. But Angel, it's like kind of the same reaction here, where he's very hesitant about this mm-hmm. like thing that he views as like a huge gift.
Well, I mean, the dude's never had happiness, and he's probably afraid to let himself feel happy for fear that all of a sudden yeah. boom, he's Angelus
pretty allergic
again.
To happiness.
But I love how he's really taking into consideration like how this could affect Buffy. Like, you see him, like, send Cordelia off to, like, go, like, talk to her. And he's like, I don't want to mention anything until I know what's going on. Because he knows what this means and what it'll do mm-hmm. to her.
Mm-hmm. I think he's in shock, honestly. He's like, oh, my gosh.
And he's hungry. I love the way David Boreanaz plays this scene. It's so, like, childlike. And he's just so excited and, like, giddy about it. And I don't know. I love it.
This was the perfect way for him to play this scene, because this emotion is not one that Angel's ever allowed to experience. And so he played the most extremely, like you said, childlike wonder and enjoyment and gleefulness, because Angel cannot possibly ever feel like that.
It's so weird to see him like happy.
Weird.
It's like unnerving.
What do you guys want to bet this is David Boreanaz' actual personality right here? I kind of feel like it is slipping out a little
bit. Yeah, I think so, it definitely
I bet it is. Like, I forget that like Angel is supposed to like feel like this, but he can't.
I think it's like the giddiness of it all. Like, I feel like we've seen Angel happy before. I think for him, happiness is very like muted. Like, he's not the type of person that's just going to be loud about it or whatever. This is like just out there.
Angel and Doyle have figured out that it's called the Moira Demon. They're powerful assassins, soldiers of darkness, and they take out warriors for their cause, Buffy and Angel. And it must have been triggered because Buffy and Angel were in the same location, supposedly. Then we get this really cool moment where he looks at his reflection in the window. But I love that they have him. It's not just a mirror. They could have done it with a mirror. They have him use the sunlight to see his reflection, which is just equally powerful in its symbolism. And Doyle is all like, hey, dude, like, go out, enjoy yourself, do what you want. Like, you're the demon's dead. You're alive. It's happy, fun time. And Angel's like, okay, things don't just happen to me for no reason. Like, this is clearly got to be for some reason. And if I'm chosen by the powers that be, wouldn't they intervene with something? Like, would they be intentionally sending me something like this for a reason? Like, he kind of wants to know, what are the strings attached to this? It can't just be a free gift. So Doyle mentions that they can go talk to the oracles and tells Angel, hey, the oracles are finicky, unpredictable, get in, ask your questions, get out, and says, I'm not allowed to go in. I'm just a lowly messenger. You're a warrior. If your heart is pure and I do this right, and then Angel gets sent in. Okay, so the oracles.
Are you going to talk about the actor?
I am going to talk about the actor.
He's such a salty person.
I know. This guy has some issues. All right. So according to Tim Minear, the fans called the oracles the glitter twins. And in the script, they're literally just called brother and sister. So they're supposed to be siblings or twins of some sort. So there's like 3 pages of quotes from the oracles in this book, Slayers and Vampires. And I'm not going to read it all verbatim to you. But Carrie Cannon is the actress who played the female oracle. And so she talks about her audition process. She says, oh, it was just really smart. I thought the writing was really good. It was fun to audition for it. It was a nice change from hamburger commercials. Then Randall Slavin, who plays the male oracle, says this, I had no idea what Buffy and Angel was. Most jobs, you just sort of go in and wonder, what am I doing here? I have to be honest. It was sort of the end of my days as an actor. Acting was a miserable experience for me. Honestly, I had no desire to read these scripts or understand what was going on or to know the story. It's why I went into photography. Oh, just wait. It gets worse.
That's so embarrassing.
What size stick is up his butt? Like, geez.
There's literally, it gets worse. Like,
just wait.
They're like, we just want to know how you felt. The poor interviewer is like so uncomfortable.
So then Carrie, the female oracle, says, being painted gold and wearing the toga for the character was so fun. Their work was so interesting. Plus I had tattoos, and like, she's talking about it. Then Randall comes in. I'd known Chris Carpenter before I did the show, and I remember sitting in my little dressing room in my stupid purple toga and painted gold on the Paramount lot, and I didn't want to run into Chris because it was so effing embarrassing. Once I snuck out to eat lunch and ran into her, and she was like, hey, I've been looking for you, and I was like, ugh, I'm trying to avoid you.
Oh my God. The fact that the other girl is so positive and is like, it was so fun, and he's like, I hated everything.
Okay, it gets worse.
Grumpy versus Sunshine trope. They end up falling in love.
Yeah, it's that tension, man. So beautiful. So then Carrie, the female, says, it was pretty clear what the writers thought these oracle characters were, and they were just sort of declarative. You just say the things as if they are true. She's like, I worked in Shakespeare and like, yeah, all this stuff. Randall says, the whole experience was awful.
They are very Shakespearean.
Yes, they are.
Her performance was way more memorable to me anyway. So, like, that's following me. She did really good. She killed it. Randall, you could go piss yourself. You know what? You feel embarrassed? We all remember you. How do you feel? You feel embarrassed in that toga? We remember.
Let me finish. It's so funny. So he goes, it's sort of like an actor's dream in a sense, because they'd call me once in a while and say, hey, we need you next week. And it's great because you don't have to audition anymore. You go and just do your thing. It should have been a dream. And I was miserable. Every time I'd go back, I'd have to stand in my underwear and get painted. And it was always a different person. So there was no sense of any familiarity. So every time you go back, you get a stranger standing in front of you and you're in your underwear. And there's
not a
it doesn't matter. Like, he's taking this way too seriously. No one cares.
He goes, miserable experience and no fault of anyone, but it probably would have been a miserable experience on any job I was doing. Let's just say my passion had waned. Yeah, you think, Randall?
It's because he probably wasn't getting any jobs because he's a sour, like,
because
person.
His attitude sucks.
Yeah.
You are what you put into the universe, man. Okay, so then Carrie's like, David Boreanaz was unfailingly kind as everyone on that set. And she's like, you know, they apparently, when they did this scene, she said that it took a number of people to make the couple of scenes happen. And one of them involved a rigged watch that had to fly across the space, like when he gives her his watch. So there was all these people standing around to make this little gimmick happen, which it felt like stage magic. It wasn't CGI'd in. They just had to make this happen. So David was a distance from us. He introduced himself and he was gracious, which I think stars tend to be when they have to welcome people all the time. So he did that. And apparently he was kind of far away from them. And so it was kind of hard for them to hear when he was speaking his lines because he had his mic right there. She goes, there was not a lot he had to do with his face. And so I think I screwed up a take or two because I was looking at him and didn't know it was my turn to talk. But he didn't react badly at all. It just took a minute for them to reset the gimmicky things. So then Randall comes in and says, David was an asshole.
This guy is so, oh my gosh.
This guy cannot read the room. My goodness.
No. Okay. It gets worse. He goes, he was just unpleasant. Whereas on other shows, you'd guessed and they're really warm because they know it's an awkward thing to walk into an established show and they know it's an uncomfortable situation for everyone. Some people you work with on a show and they're really warm and you feel like they're welcoming you there. David fell into the second category of people definitely making you feel lesser than. He was just dismissive and unwelcoming, just playing at the hierarchy of set life because there's definitely a hierarchy.
It's his show. That's why. The reason why there's a quote unquote hierarchy is because it's his show.
I feel like he's projecting.
Yeah. Well, no, I think David probably was an ass to him, but I think there was a reason. So here's why. So Randall says, I remember I had this stupid line, which I couldn't remember for the effing life of me. I was
there it is.
Some sort.
There it
I
is.
Having, no, 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 wait.
I'm excited. Says, get him, David. Get him. <Sick of him. laughs> Go, David, go.
He says, I was having some sort of family issues and there was this one stupid line.
It's always family issues. It's always family issues.
But for some reason, he can't remember what the family issue was. I was having some sort of family issue. Never. I don't remember which one.
His aunt's hamster's cousin died. And that's a lie.
He says, I was having some sort of family issues and there was this one stupid line. And as an actor, sometimes you can get stuck on it. And the longer you're stuck on it, the harder it is to get out. And as a guest star, it's a really uncomfortable experience. And David was really frustrating. And he had it out for me. It was this stupid line. I couldn't remember it. I couldn't get it out now, however many years ago. I can tell it to you without question. I must have done 20 takes on this stupid ass line. That which we serve is no longer that which you serve. You are released from your fealty.
That That's line, so easy. He couldn't say that line.
He had like seven too. Like, my goodness.
I'd be mad too if you're literally the guest star and we have to do 20 takes for your one line. Seriously?
And he has, every week he has to carry the whole show. Yeah.
A role that 1,500 people are literally in line to take and you can't get this. So,
and there's a difference between like messing up like 2-3 times maybe. I feel like that's pretty standard. But it's like when everyone's waiting for only you, take after take after take, and you're just guest starring. Like, this is when you're kissing everyone's butts because you want to be called back. That's what you want. That's what you want to do. Like, you want to be so good that they remember you and they can bring you back.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So this is a mild spoiler for later on. So the oracles in a later episode get killed off. And so this is in regards to that episode.
God.
So Carrie Carrie says,
sweet Carrie.
She says, wasn't it terrible that the oracles were killed? We were not very good at reading the future, were we? I mean, really not great oracles.
No.
And then she goes, what's funny is they ended up killing us rather abruptly. And my agent thinks it's because Randall's agent asked for more money.
Oh.
No way.
This guy how has are they no allowed to shame. Air
all of that? Like, how are they allowed to say all of that?
That's insane. That's
funny.
Okay, no, it keeps going because then Randall comes in with his side of the story.
Oh, fucking Randall.
He's like, I definitely asked for more money and they didn't give it to me and I left.
So then she says, my agent thinks it's because Randall's agent asked for more money. I remember being surprised when I got the script and I was like, we're dead? How can we be dead? So she's like, I'm repeating a 16-year-old rumor from my former agent who may no longer be on the planet. But I remember her saying, I think they were looking for more money because they originally wanted to bring the characters back. So we might have actually had more oracles if it weren't for freaking Randall.
Oh my gosh. So I always funny. Thought that they were underused.
They should have just killed the male oracle and kept Carrie on.
Yeah,
she was seriously. She was great, yeah.
Okay, so then the last quote from Randall, he says, I wasn't happy they killed us. As miserable as I was, you're still like, I'm going to do it. Apparently, I couldn't see the future for myself because I was very upset that they killed us. And then I was having trouble with other things I was inquiring about. The industry was kicking me out in a lot of ways.
No, it just seems like you didn't want to be there.
He's like, I hate this effing job. Wait, you're firing me?
Well, okay. And the thing was, is like, the first quote that he gave, too, he was talking about how, like, he was like, I hate this whole, the hierarchy and all this stuff. And that's why I decided to quit acting and went into photography. But at the very end, he says the industry kicked him out. This sounds like someone who just, I mean, we're psychoanalyzing an extra on a show, but like, this guy sounds like someone who literally it's everyone else's problem. Everyone else is to blame. And not
I feel
him.
Like the fact that he gave these quotes to whoever he gave them to is like, just speaks volumes of like how unprofessional he probably was as a, like a person trying to get work. Mm-hmm. As an actor, like, if you're willing to go out and, like, slander a show and an actor that, like, gave you a job, I feel like, yeah. Like, I feel like he wasn't getting very many jobs and he was, like, bitter about it. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. Yep. So, anyway, I thought that was extremely funny and I know that kind of took away from everything else, but, oh, I had to just share that because I've never... Someone's personality has never shown through so much in just the quotes from another person on a book. Yeah. All right. So Angel gives the sister Oracle his watch, and there's a repeated theme throughout the episode of time. We repeatedly see clocks and watches and all this stuff going on. And Angel's like, was it the powers that be that did this? And they're like, it's just something that happens in life. And basically, you're a human. So go out and be free, be merry, because tomorrow you die, essentially. So they eject him from the chamber, and Doyle's like, did it work? What did they say? Angel's like, it was a little confusing. They said a lot of big fancy words, but the gist is, it's real. I'm free. And Doyle's like, I can't believe this. And Angel's like, what do I do now? I've got a whole new life spread out before me. I don't know where to begin. And Doyle says, you can do whatever you want. So the question is, what do you want?
So cute. Oh, it's like the first thing he thinks of wanting is Buffy.
I know. I love how it's cut because like it cuts immediately from him sitting there to Buffy walking. Like the way that they shoot it, you're like, there's no questioning what it is that he wants. So I find Doyle's question really interesting. And it's the crux of this episode because it's the same thing that Marcus asked Angel in the dark. He mentioned he wanted forgiveness. Angel says he wants forgiveness when Marcus asks him that. And in this episode, Pasha the Nerd talks about how Angel he tends towards more hedonistic things, not in like a negative way, but he's like food and Buffy and all of this other stuff. But I think it's really interesting that you have that same question asked here as there was in the dark. And I think that yes, Buffy is ultimately what Angel wants, but by the end of the episode, Angel recognizes and realizes that he has a role and a responsibility and that it's moved beyond Buffy. And while she'll always be hugely important to him, and while obviously her death and her not getting hurt is a huge factor for him, at the end of the day, recognizing that he has a role and he has a mission. And I think it's similar to In the Dark, where he wants to actually earn his forgiveness. He doesn't want it to be something that is just given to him. And so I think they purposely make that mirroring with Doyle's question here. So then we have this beautiful scene. This is my favorite scene of this episode. It just makes my heart so happy every time I see it. Buffy's walking along the Santa Monica Pier and she feels him. Do you notice that she still feels him even after he's human? Yes.
Well, because he's still Angel.
I feel the responsibility to say that Leah has only cried while watching Dirty Dancing and when it had a Teenage Dragon, and she also cried when Angel walked out and kissed her. So Leah doesn't tend to cry while watching stuff.
It also was like the anxiety of everything, because I was like, this isn't gonna last. So I just was like, no, I don't like the fact that I'm happy, because I, like, whenever they're too happy, something happens. So it's just the anxiety of like what's gonna happen.
It was also during COVID, and we all were like locked in our house for like 2 months.
My wall was down.
Leah's like, I was compromised, guys.
I looked over and Leah's sitting there and she's like, guys. And she's like wiping the tears. It was so funny. Oh my goodness.
Wait, you cried at this scene or the last scene?
Both.
I think both. But okay. I did cry at the end of Angel out of anger.
So Buffy is strolling along the pier. Then she senses something. So I'm just going to read what the script says. It says, walks along the park, the ocean and pier behind her. A beautiful sunny day, we hope. Couples and tourists stroll and rollerblade. The Ferris wheel rolls on the pier in background. Big daily life, which Buffy moves through without noting. On her mission, her face a little grim. Then she stops, sensing something. She turns. A long ways away, she sees something. A figure stepping out of the dark. Angel is a dark figure stepping into the light and the people. And I love the way they wrote that, because he actually, like, the symbolism of him being able to go into the light to join her, like, and it's so amazing that they filmed it here in a place that is so alive. Like, the ocean just represents, like, life and with the water and the people, and it's just everything that Angel cannot have. And I think it's also symbolic, too, because In the Dark, Angel put on the ring, stepped onto the beach, and then recognized his role was to help these people in the light by being in the dark. So it's very symbolic that he's leaving the dark to go towards the beach, towards Buffy, in the light. And it's almost like, okay, so what about all those people that you're leaving behind that need your help in the dark?
Right.
Like, you know? And that's ultimately, obviously, what pulls him back. But we're going to enjoy this moment for right now because it's beautiful. It's the first and only time we hear Buffy and Angel's theme in a major key, not a minor key. It transposes up into a hopeful key instead of one of melancholy and sadness. It's just, it's everything so we want, and it's beautiful.
She looks so beautiful, too, when she, like, turns around in her hair and, like, oh, my God. Ugh. Mm-hmm.
And the script says, Angel moves towards her, closing the distance between them, his eyes never leaving hers, until he's upon her and sweeping her into his arms, and her disbelief is replaced by something else, years of longing. They don't speak.
Oh, my God.
They just kiss as though there were no tomorrow. Because there isn't.
I feel like scenes like this, like, they can be really cheesy if they're done wrong. Yeah. But man, David Boreanaz and Sarah Michelle Gellar just pull this off so freaking well. Like, I don't know, like, I can literally, everything that you read about how they're supposed to be, like, looking and, like, acting and stuff, like, I can see it in, like, the way they chose to, like, act in that scene. It is just so beautiful.
So back in Angel's office, the clock on Angel's desk reads 5:03. Cordelia's picking off all the dead leaves off the dead plant. And no, this is not the same plant as the one Melissa gave Angel in, what was it, I Fall to Pieces. But I think they might have intended that it was supposed to be the same plant, because I think it's the idea that now that Angel's no longer human, his mission to help people in the same capacity that he was is dead. It's no longer an option. So then Doyle asks Cordelia if she's jealous. And is there a section of the script that was cut out, Leah, that, like, in Cordelia's response?
Yeah, so Cordelia's, like, going off about how their lives are about to kaleidoscope and blah, 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 blah. And then and then Doyle goes, you know, maybe you're jealous. And the line that we hear is, I'm jealous of her. Oh, please. But then the parts that were cut out say, so because I was always kind of like confused. Like, why is she jealous? Like, what reason does Cordelia have for not being happy for her friend and for Buffy? And like, why is there all of this like negativity coming from her? And I thought that this line that was cut was like very interesting. So she goes, I'm jealous of her. Oh, please. Just because she gets all the attention, killing ugly demons and saving the world basically unscathed, while I always seem to end up with a rebar through my torso and really bad hair.
Mm.
I'm kind of glad they cut it because it makes her look like really bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, yeah, it's just even, I feel like if they were even trying to play that jealousy as like, like that, like it's just very shallow because we've seen what Buffy has like gone through. Like, you, Cordelia, you have nothing but to also be jealous of. That wasn't of.
Buffy's fault.
Literally.
Yeah. Literally Xander.
Buffy wasn't even there. Mm. Yeah.
There's literally. Buffy getting, having to experience the consequences and the blame from something that Xander has done,
like,
yet again.
Cordelia literally wished Buffy's like existence away or whatever in the wish after that all happened. Like, it's yeah. just, it's just weird that this is like, Cordelia has nothing to be jealous of because she's been there to see what Buffy's like slayerdom has like taken away from her. So it's like, I just don't really, I don't understand why.
Yeah, but unfortunately yeah. that is a pattern in the Buffyverse. Or it's like, even the people that yeah. have seen Buffy sacrifice the most, mm-hmm. with the exception of Angel, for some reason, like, just don't.
They think she's lucky or something. It. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
She gets all the yep. attention and fights these ugly demons and leaves unscathed. Like,
but also, she is not unscathed.
Literally.
Yeah. Like, she died.
Yeah.
Literally. Yeah. She had to kill Angel.
So they talk a little bit, and then Cordelia says, oh, please, they've got the forbidden love of all time. I'm sure they're just down there having tea and crackers. Cut to awkward silence.
Oh, my God.
While it... the water is being poured from a teapot. It's so weird because I'm like, Buffy and Angel having tea? Like, what is this?
It's so weird. It's cute.
But I also think it shows, like, Buffy and Angel have always been way more responsible, like, responsible than everyone gives yeah. them credit for. I think 100%. That people have always made it out to be that when Angel lost his soul and all this stuff, it was that they knew the risks and that they, like, just went in willy-nilly. It's like, no, the minute Buffy and Angel knew the risks and all that, they have been above and beyond. Like,
careful.
What they, yeah.
They are painfully aware of their limitations. They're painfully aware that they can't be intimate with each other. And this is a huge hurdle for them. And they're not just like slaves to passion, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I really like that you said that, Leah, because I feel like not a lot of people take that into consideration. And then they just take like what the narrator of the episode, like Cordelia, for example, in this episode, they just take what they're saying as like truth. And it's like, it's not true. Once again.
And Angel's like, I'm really sorry I kissed you like that. And Buffy's like, you are? And he's like, not for the kiss itself. And then she's like, oh, good. Because as kisses go, I thought it was well above average. And he was like, it was incredible. It's just, I think maybe we'd be asking for trouble and rushing back into things. And Buffy's like, dang it, I want more smoochies. So then they had this conversation about like, oh, okay, maybe we should like take things slow. But you could tell Buffy is just like, distracted. Angel's distracted. Like, as they're talking, as one person talks, the other person kind of like zones out and then has to be like brought back in. And like, they're trying to like logic themselves into waiting. There could be another loophole. And Angel's like, it'd be smart to wait. It's complicated. You're still the Slayer. And then Angel kind of goes into like all the reasons why it would be really hard to work apart from him being a vampire and undead. He says, you're still the Slayer. I'm not sure what I am now. I don't know what my purpose is. Buffy's completely zoning out at this point. And then there's a line that's cut from the script. It says, Buffy says, helpfully, Xander's talking about starting an internet company. Plus, he has an extra cot in his basement. And then off his look, just kidding.
Imagine.
I want to see it.
Could you imagine, don't. Honestly, like, that's crazy that she would even say that to him. Imagine.
It is. But that's so funny.
Like, Angel is not Spike. He can't just live in Xander's basement.
I know this is hilarious because that's exactly what happens just a couple episodes from now. Spike moves into Xander's basement. Yeah. So then Angel's like, but that's what I mean. I can't just wedge myself back into your life back in Sunnydale. It wouldn't be good for either of us, not to mention the fact that you just started college. What about slang? If you had me to worry about, you might not be as focused. And I was like, okay, this is all valid, but none of it is a huge deterrent in my book because weren't they doing all
like,
these things?
I was like, y'all just figure it out. Like, my gosh. Yeah.
Weren't you doing this for the past three seasons?
I think like, these are all like, I like that they're talking about this because it shows that like, okay, we're going to take a minute and we're going to think about this because this is huge. This is like a life-changing yeah. thing. But I just – and I understand why like they're trying to set it up as like reasons for why they can't be together. I yeah. feel like it's – if this had happened at the end of the series, for example, these reasons wouldn't matter because it would be like, no, like we can make it work. Like I happen to think that if Angel remained human – I think they could have made it work. He has like hundreds of years of knowledge. He could have been like Giles, like a watcher or something. Mm-hmm. Like he still has something to offer in that sense. But yeah. then in order to like continue on with Angel the series, like obviously his whole story is like, you know, seeking redemption and stuff. So
yeah, I'm sorry. If Xander can be part of the Scooby gang as a human with no fighting experience whatsoever and have made it like he's alive in season four, I'm pretty sure Angel will be just fine, you know?
Yeah.
I'm glad they didn't make him human. I'm sorry.
Shun the non-believer.
And again, I wish this episode, minus the last 10 minutes, happened at like the very end of either of the shows.
Yeah.
But I just don't think it would have worked if he was human. I just think it would have weakened it.
It takes away from, like, the whole premise of his show, definitely.
So then, you know, Angel's like, I'm not saying I don't want you, Buffy. I'm just saying it's worth the wait to know it's right. I need to be sure you won't get hurt again. And then she says probably the most, like, relatable thing she says is going to say this episode. She says, good thing I didn't fantasize about you turning human about 10 zillion times because today would have been a real letdown.
Oh, man. Angel, just please have sex with her. Like, please. Oh, my gosh. Like, just for once in your life, please be irresponsible. Like, I actually need it to happen.
Well, wish granted, Leah. So then this whole, how does the mature plan go? We just don't touch, remove the temptation, blah, blah, blah. Okay, we'll talk soon. This was just executed so beautifully.
Oh my God, it was
But
so
also
perfect.
Tastefully, but just like the whole like their hands touch first. And like that was like, that was the That's match it. That lit everything up. And oh, and she's so tiny when he picks her up. I was like, oh my gosh. Just puts her on the table, sweeps everything off the table. Like it's like every cliche that we've ever wanted to see.
I feel like the thing with like their scenes together, like this scene, it feels like it doesn't feel like I'm watching two actors going at it. Like
That's
it,
what I was
it
gonna say.
Feels like I am watching these two very real people that are like literally cannot not have each other in this moment. And it's like, it's yep. so crazy because there's a lot of like, we see a lot of like sex scenes or whatever in these shows. And I feel like sometimes it's very like, oh, this is acting. Like I can tell that this is very like, oh, like, you know, do this and that and put your hand yeah, here and whatever.
Yeah.
But with this, I just feel like it's like, it doesn't even feel like acting anymore. Like that's how much they convince you of like, Buffy and Angel's like how they jump on each other.
Yeah. And it I think it's also really interesting. I always look at how they frame sex scenes, particularly because how they frame it and how they choose to shoot it and what kind of sex they have and stuff, it often tries to convey the type of relationship they have, the type of feelings they're going to have. And like we saw early season two, their kisses, as like we get closer to Surprise and Innocence, they get more like deep and passionate and lots of makeout sessions. And then their relation or their night that they have sex in Surprise, like we don't see very much. We just see them kiss. And but it's just a very like deep, desperate type of kiss. Mm-hmm. And then I think of Amends when we have the sex scene there again, it's just very like slow and
it's very like sensual. Like
it's like, very sensual. Yeah. Yeah.
Buffy and Angel's like love scenes are always very sensual. Yeah. This is like desperation. Like this is like, yeah. I can't not have you in this moment.
I think this is more unbridled than anything we've seen before because for the first time they can fully let loose with no repercussions and mm-hmm. consequences. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's a reason why they show Angel sweeping everything off the table because I think it's representative of Angel being like, you know what? This is my moment. I'm seizing it. I'm taking it. And I don't have to worry about anything else versus in Amends. It was very much like touching something tender. Like we can't have each other. So we're just going to really indulge and savor this moment. Buffy and Angel right here, they are just going for it because in their mind, they have the future. They have the rest of whatever. So like, let's just go for it. And I love that the next scene is just so precious. You have, it just feels so domestic. Angel's at the fridge and Buffy's yelling, hey, get like the peanut butter, the chunky kind. And then he comes back over and they jump into bed together and they're feeding each other different goodies and stuff. And just like the looks on both of their faces, I haven't seen this look in Buffy's face since when she was first dating Angel in early season one. Angel, we've never seen this carefreeness about mm-hmm. him, like this giddiness that he has around her. Like this is Angel without the constant curse writing on his shoulders. This is probably the closest we get to see Angel before he was turned into a vampire.
And we get naked David Boreanaz running across the room. And the table is broken.
Oh yeah.
The kitchen table is in shambles. There's things everywhere and he is retrieving ice cream from the fridge and it's absolutely perfect.
Every time I see this scene
and he's naked, he's naked.
I think that
don't David forget Boreanaz that he's naked.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I think that David Boreanaz is probably actually naked with how he liked to just walk around the set with no pants on.
Actually, like I think he was in that scene where he's running, but then as soon as he gets to the bed, you can actually see yeah. like his pants, his like boxers.
Well, I don't think that they allow that. That like I know. I mean, I know now that there's like intimate coordinators, and I know that's like a new thing within the last decade, but I still think that like they wouldn't have people like actually naked.
Yeah, like if they're in the scene together.
They would wear like flesh underwear.
Yeah, maybe if he was by himself, then maybe he would have.
But I'm talking about like in a bed together.
When he's like running across the kitchen and he's hidden totally. By like objects, like he's yes, fully yeah, that's naked what I was there. Thinking. Yeah. yeah, but then yeah. once he like makes it to the bed.
That's you what can I mean when they're boxers. Together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And then, you know, Buffy's wearing his shirt.
Oh my God, she's so cute. Glowing. She's absolutely like glowing. I don't think I've ever seen her look like so beautiful. She's like in bed eating chocolate and peanut butter.
She's just happy.
It's just so lovely.
It's beautiful. And she says, by the way, I'm over the needing to be mature part. That time you spent in the kitchen just now, that was enough time apart. And then I love that they like, they're talking and then he drips the ice cream on himself and then she licks it off and he says, wait, okay. So the script has that written in, but I've seen in so many different places that they said that that was like
yeah,
accidental.
It doesn't seem like it's accidental. Like the way he yeah. holds the spoon, I'm like, yeah. that was an actor's choice.
The way they played it made it seem like it was just like, oh, whoops, the ice cream fell.
I wonder if they had to do that take a couple times. But let me tell you, the moment that she goes and she like licks it off of him, like, and he grabs her and then she giggles, I felt like that was Sarah and David in that moment. It just felt very, like her laugh felt very real in that moment. They just have such great chemistry.
They have, like, literally such good chemistry.
And then wah-wah, move to the bar where Cordelia is sulking with Doyle. Things were going so well. It's just really hard to feel bad for Cordelia.
It's great. I'm out of a job. Like, okay, go find another job then.
I don't feel bad. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. But even if you take Buffy out of it, Angel finding happiness and like a new life is so much more important than your job.
Exactly.
Sorry.
And they yeah. didn't they cut apart from this scene where Doyle's like, can't mm-hmm. you just try to be happy for your friend?
Yeah, there's actually quite a few bits of dialogue that are cut out that actually make Cordelia seem a lot worse than what she is. And in some cases, like Doyle even saying like, hey, just be happy for her. Hey, just like, you know, it's kind of challenging her and she's just not even listening, which I was like, you know what? Good for Doyle. Good for Doyle for sticking up for his friend and for trying to give Cordelia a new perspective. So, okay, one thing that I was a little confused about with this episode was why would the powers that be show Doyle the vision in this episode when Angel doesn't have his powers unless the powers that be knew that Angel would get them again? Because the powers that be sent the vision from the last episode to bring Angel to this point. So it kind of makes it seem as if the powers that be are intentionally causing all this to happen so that Angel accepts his purpose in the long run.
So it's like a big test.
Yeah. Because other than that, I don't really see the point of them sending
these visions. That's a good point. I've never thought of that, actually.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, because why would they do that? And I think I've seen a quote by Tim Minear where they were saying how they wanted to make it a little bit more explicit that this is supposed to be like the final test for Angel from the powers that be. So maybe there's like elements of that they like put in the episode but didn't go full on like explicitly saying that it was a test, because that's what it kind of sounds like, is like the powers that be are testing Angel, like tempting him and seeing what choice he's going to make. I feel like they should have made it
more obvious.
Yeah, I think agree. So too. I think it's implied and you can like get to that conclusion just by watching the episode. But I also like, I wish it was made more clear, like maybe through the oracles.
Yeah, all you needed was one conversation. But I bet you they didn't want to give any more dialogue
to Randall.
Yeah, knowing what Randall will do.
Freaking Randall ruining everything.
Randall's like, I gotta learn one more line. Oh my God.
So Doyle gets his vision. The Moira demon is not just dead, but he's actually back bigger than ever. So he's like, we have a problem. And then we have that moment with Buffy and Angel snuggling in bed.
This is probably one of my favorite scenes in like the entire like two shows. And I know that's like a big thing to say, but it's just so freaking beautiful.
She says, I just want to stay awake so our day can keep happening. He's like, it's okay, sleep. We'll make another one like it tomorrow.
Oh my God. No, you won't.
And then Buffy says, I think probably the most profound thing. Angel, this is the first time I've ever felt this way. Just the way I've always wanted to, like a normal girl, falling asleep in the arms of her normal boyfriend. It's perfect.
And she won't even remember it. Ugh. Buffy's like happiest moment that she will honestly just never remember.
Like having watched all of Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I can confidently say that this is like probably the happiest Buffy has ever been, I think, in like the entire series. And it's so sad that she can't even like have that memory.
It's because she's allowing herself to. You could see her like releasing herself.
Well, we've talked about it since the very beginning. Angel is often very like, obviously she loves him and she cares about him so much, but he's often very much a symbol of a normal happy life for Buffy. And in a lot of ways, Angel knows her better than most anybody else. And he also accepts that Slayer part of herself in a way that most everybody else can't. And he also understands the fact that that part of her life is going to be different, the challenges that she faces. And so I think that her finally being able to have Angel human, just like her, but also like with everything still intact, he still knows what it's like to fight. He still knows all that stuff. Like, it is also like very interesting to think about the hypotheticals too. I think there's a theme of Buffy's always wanted a normal life. Let's say that she has it now. Will that affect her slaying life? Would she actually be distracted moving forward now that she has that normal life? Would it be hard for her to slay?
I don't think she would. I think it's just a plot device. I really do. Obviously, I get it. But it's also like, it has been so proven in the show so many times that when Buffy has things to actually fight for, she is actually a better slayer. So I don't think that her having a loving boyfriend would be a distraction any more than having friends would be a distraction who can't fight for themselves.
I think with a human Angel, it would have given Buffy a safe space, just like he's always provided to her. We know she's not going to live to be 50 years old. Like, slayers die young, and like, I want Buffy to live forever, but it's a given that Buffy's not going to have a long life because of her line of work and her destiny. And I think with a partner like Angel, even as a human, like, I think that, yes, it wouldn't have been a distraction. It would have been a relief. It would have been, like, a safe space for her to be able to shoulder the burden of, like, the world without having to keep everything to herself. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we see her do a lot throughout the series. Buffy can never be completely normal, but she also doesn't have to be just the Slayer. And I feel mm-hmm. like a human Angel is, like, the perfect medium for, like, a partner for her, because he's kind of the best of both worlds, in that circumstance. And I don't think that mm-hmm. he would be a distraction, like, at all. Because, first of all, he wouldn't allow himself to be a distraction. And second of all, he brings, like, so much more to the table than your regular human guy.
So Doyle comes in while they're sleeping, or I guess Buffy's sleeping. Angel's just staring lovingly at her. He says, hey, the Moira demon is back, bigger and badder than ever. Angel's like, well, we shouldn't let that thing roam free, showing that he still has, like, this conflict of, like, I still have my duty. I still have, like, I have all this knowledge now. How can I just go back and live a normal life? And Doyle's like, but how are you going to kill it? Don't you think we should bring Buffy? And he says, don't you want to wake the girl? And Angel says, not for the world, which is so sweet, but come on, Angel, wake her. She'll be fine.
Like, but it's also so stupid. Like, come on, yeah. Just wake her up.
All right. So they're like, this whole plan is just, like, not thought through. Doyle's, like, reading as they're walking through. It just feels like it's very, like, half-assed. Like, they just completely threw it together. And then we see that the Moira demon is actually tracking them and knows that they're there. Angel sees all the dead factory workers and recoils to make the distinction that he now is affected by blood. Like, he really is actually human. So the Moira demon jumps down. There is a fight. Angel is getting manhandled to the point where he actually runs away. And I think this is the first time I've seen Angel run away from a fight. Back at Angel's office, Cordelia is tagging things, probably putting price tags on everything to go sell it.
These are not her belongings. I don't know why she's trying to sell. Are these not Angel's weapons?
I don't know.
Why?
I know. It's like the once and only time she's, like, actually done something for the office is genuinely for her own gain.
She just, like, went into Angel's home, took his weapons, and is, like, trying to sell them as a going out of business. Well, you aren't going to need these.
You're going to be living with Xander.
Oh, my God. At least she's not cutting up his linoleum.
So Buffy comes in, asks where Angel is. Cordelia just kind of completely ignores it. And it's like, I'm decided not to feel sorry for myself. I'm taking matters into my own hands. And then they cut this line from the script. So Cordelia says, organizing a little going out of business sale to subsidize the severance package Angel never bothered setting up for me. Then she says, under which Buffy returns to Cordelia. So she's saying that Buffy needs to pay her for the severance because she's taking Angel away from Cordelia.
I can't deal with her in this episode anymore. Honestly, like, I just need her to leave.
It just, honestly, it's such a disservice to Cordelia's
character. It is, yeah.
It's absolutely embarrassing. It's embarrassing for her character.
Cordelia lets it slip that Angel actually went after the Moira demon. Buffy takes off to go after him. The music that's actually playing in this scene while Angel's fighting the Moira demon is the same music that was played in Buffy's Helpless when Giles goes to Sunnydale to find Travers, but finds that Kralik has escaped, which was really interesting because when I was watching this, I was like, oh, this reminds me of Helpless when Buffy became human. I mean, she is human, but when she was human without powers. Oh,
that is interesting.
Yeah. So it's interesting that they have that comparison there. So Buffy jumps in just as the Moira demon has Angel at sword point. He says, yours is a sacred death, ushering in the beginning of a sacred time. The end of days has begun and cannot be stopped. For any one of us who falls, 10 shall rise. I was like, oh, thank you. You mean there's more of you out there? Great. We'll come find you at the end of the show.
Yeah, seriously. Tell me exactly where you all are.
So Buffy jumps into the pit. You hurt my boyfriend. They work together. And the Moira demon points that out. He says, together you are powerful. Alone you're dead. Buffy finally defeats the Moira demon by smashing the gem. And then we have this touching moment where Buffy is holding Angel on her lap. And that and the boyfriend line remind me so much of What's My Line Part 2, where yeah. Buffy comes in, says all of that, and then we have that moment where Angel's head is on her lap then too. So I, again, tiny little callbacks to all of the various moments in their relationship. So then we cut to the Oracle's once again. Freaking Randall's back on the screen.
Randall.
You again. The Oracle, the guy Oracle even kind of has an attitude in the episode.
Yeah, he does.
Too.
Maybe that's why they hired him. Like, this guy's perfect.
Angel has a gift this time. It's a little vase. And Angel's like, hey, the Moira demon said this really interesting thing. He said the end of days had begun, that others were coming. I need to know if he was telling me the truth. And the brother's like, well, we can't really tell you. Blah, blah, blah. And Angel's like, well, what happens to the Slayer? And then the sister's like, she's going to die. But in this case, she will die sooner simply because of your choice. So Angel's like, I'm here to bargain. I want to beg for her life. And they said, it's not our place to grant life and death. Angel says, I ask you to take mine back. I can't protect her as a man. And they're like, you're asking to be what you were, which that's ludicrous. You were a demon with a soul because of the Slayer. Like, you're asking to go through all of that. It's not just giving up Buffy. And I think people forget the sucky deal that Angel's getting when they're like, oh my gosh, he's making a decision without her.
He's giving up life.
Angel is giving up life. He's giving up Buffy. He's also agreeing to have the curse put back on him. He's agreeing to give up happiness for the rest of his life, essentially. Like, he's getting the raw end of the deal here. And that's, these are decisions and choices that Buffy really has no say in and can't actually have an opinion on because they don't affect her other than them being in a relationship, you know?
I think it's just also the circumstance that he's in. He goes to the Oracles and he asks them, you know, end of days, what's the deal? They tell him that it's coming, and he asks what will happen to the Slayer. They tell him that she will die sooner. And then they give him one option. And it's like Angel doesn't have the opportunity to be like, hey, like, hold on a minute. Let me just go discuss this with Buffy. Like, he has to make a decision, like, on the spot.
Yeah.
And I think that's like, it's, imagine how hard that is.
I also feel like he knew that if he didn't make it in that moment, that he wouldn't. He wouldn't have the strength to do it. I mean, he even tells Buffy that. He says, if I had woken up with you one more morning, I wouldn't be able to do it.
The Oracles are like, well, why would we do this for you? Like, this doesn't concern us. This is basically just something you want. And Angel's very clever. He's like, well, yeah, it does. I'm no good to you like this. Therefore, like, I know you have the power to make it right, to take me back. So it's really interesting. The sister Oracle seems genuinely moved by Angel and his love for Buffy. She's like, we'll swallow this day. 24 hours from the moment the demon first attacked you, we'll take it back. And then Angel's like, well, okay, well, what's going to stop us from being able to relive this moment? And she's like, you alone will carry that memory. Can you carry that burden? And Angel's like, why not? Marty carrying everybody else's burdens, Cordelia's burden, the curse. Like, sure, what's another one? No, but in all seriousness,
his that's face, heavy. His like, the last shot on his face is like devastating because it's like sinking in that this is what he has to do. Like, this is his only choice. And I don't know. It's just, yeah, the way David Boreanaz's face was just spoke volumes of like how he was feeling inside.
So back in Angel's apartment, the clock now reads 8:57. Buffy's like, where have you been? He said, I went to see the Oracles. I asked them to turn me back. Like, just jumps straight into it. Buffy is stunned. He says, more than ever, I know how much I love you. If I stay mortal, one of us will wind up dead, maybe both. You heard what the Moira demon said. And she's like, but we killed him. And he said, others would come. She's like, but they always will come. Like, that's my problem, not yours. And he says, I can't just stand by and let you fight. And then she's like, well, then we'll fight together. And he's like, you saw what happened. Like, clearly, I cannot fight the way that I used to. And you're going to risk everything to try and find me. I'm a liability. And he says, and that's not just bad for you. It's bad for the people we were meant to help. Again, Angel keeps bringing in his mission and all these people. And I think, like, it's interesting to see how his perspective has shifted over the past few episodes. And I think it's really cool. So Angel says, how can we be together if the cost is your life or the lives of others? Buffy and Angel's theme comes in again, but this time it's the minor theme.
And this is the moment when he says that, like, you could see it all sinking in for Buffy. Like, she has nothing. Up until this point, she was, like, fighting him on it. And it was, like, that line where she just kind of went, like, oh, shit. Like, he's right.
Do you guys agree with common criticisms of this episode? How they felt like this episode took away Buffy's autonomy in this moment, and that Angel was making this decision, and that he was taking Buffy's memory away from her without her consent.
First of all, he didn't take her memory away. The Oracle chose to do that. He didn't have an option. They literally said, only you will remember. He had no say. Second of all, I think that if he could, I think he'd want her to remember, honestly. But also, he's not taking away any of her autonomy. He's actually owning his. He's owning the fact that he gets to choose.
That's a great way of putting it. If he wants
to stay as a human or go back. So this isn't really about Buffy not having a choice. It's about Angel having one.
Yes. Absolutely. And that's where you kind of go back to what we said in the beginning of the episode, where, like, you're watching this episode from Angel's point of view because this is his show, and these writing choices are being made to advance his character. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the people who criticize, like, this criticism that he's taking away Buffy's choice is completely ignoring his choice, which is the focus of the episode.
Passion of the Nerd says it really well. He says, according to the show's philosophy, real purpose comes from our commitments, our choices, and the actions we take from them. To this point, Angel's curse, both vampire and gypsy, has defined his circumstances, and from that, his calling. With all of that having fallen away, he doesn't know what he is or what his purpose is. The episode's significant takeaway is time. Angel may not see the pattern to his life yet, in that there will always be another battle, but the trade-off he has to make to be with Buffy means that he will not be a soldier in the next one. As a flesh and blood man, in not waking Buffy, he tried to prove he could take on the Moira, to fight without superpowers, and so be worthy of fighting at Buffy's side. But he can't, and he knows that in the end, Buffy will pay the price. Buffy and Angel are both heroes, and the path that makes them who they are is what will keep them from each other. He doesn't get to curl up in her arms and watch the sunset, because there is always another sunrise. Strong is fighting, hard, painful every day. And what this episode represents to me is Angel accepting the necessity of that path. Their burden is the inevitability of time in the form of the next battle. This is the weight of the rock, another day.
That's so beautifully said. And I think it just goes to show that, like, if Buffy were in the same position as Angel, she would have made the same decision.
Yeah.
Because they are so similar in that way. And it is such, that's the tragedy of this, like, relationship that we love so much. And I think that's what makes us love it so much, is, like, I feel like the things that make Buffy and Angel so perfect for one another are the same exact reasons that they can, like, never be together, you know? Yeah. Like, who else in the world will ever be able to understand, like, having to make a decision like this than those two people? But it's because of this that they can't be together, because of, like, the nature of this decision. And it's, like, to invalidate Angel's decision and to say that, like, he's, you know, taking away Buffy's choice, or, you know, that he should have, should he have consulted with her? Yeah, I think it would have been lovely if he had the opportunity to tell the Oracles, hey, can I just get back to you in, like, a few hours and go and discuss this with Buffy? But, like, realistically, were the Oracles, who did not want to give him the time of day, going to just allow him to be like, oh, yeah, like, go talk to her and come back and let us know?
Like Doyle says, they were finicky, you know?
Exactly.
But also, like, isn't technically Buffy killing Angel in season 2 and not telling him before she was? Isn't that more of a violation?
For the sake of the world, too.
I don't think either are, but I'm just saying.
It's a similar sacrifice. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Buffy would do the same exact thing. And you're saying that, like, by Angel doing this, it's, like, taking away Buffy's choice. But it's, like, she understands the choice more than anybody on this planet. So it's, like, stop taking that, like, understanding away from her and, like, turning her into this, like, victim, because she's not, you know, like, and I see, sorry, I'm going on a little bit of a rant here, but I see a lot of criticism. People are like, oh, like, you know, Angel went back to the apartment and he told her about the choice that he had made. He could have just not told her and spared her that pain. Why did he tell her if she was just going to forget anyway? And it's like, why wouldn't he tell her? Is he not allowed a moment of selfishness to, like, ask for comfort and understanding from his partner? Like, I feel like Angel in that moment when he told her, it was kind of something he did for himself, knowing that in literally a few moments, she would forget all of it. And he would have to live with this memory for the rest of his life. So I'm sorry, but I will allow Angel that moment of selfishness to be like, I want to share this with my partner. I want my partner to shoulder this weight with me for just a few moments. And it's like, what difference does it make? Because Buffy's not going to remember. And again, that goes back to like, let's put ourselves in Angel's shoes. And a lot of people are not willing to do that. And it's such a shame because this is such a great episode for him. This is the next step of his like character development. And it's just, you're just dismissing all of that because you're unwilling to even consider his point of view. And it's just, it's such a shame. And it just makes me sad.
The Angel erasure in this fandom is so frustrating because he has the, other than like Buffy and maybe some other people I'm blanking on right now. But he has like some rich backstory, some rich inner dialogue, some rich like darker side of him that is just so compelling. Like everything about his character is so freaking interesting. And people are like, their relationship is just kind of boring. I'm like, because they're in love? I'm a little confused. I'm sorry, they don't seethingly hate each other. Like, okay. Sue me, I like to see people who, like, genuinely love each other and understand each other.
So Angel explains what's going to happen to Buffy, and they look at the clock, realize that they literally just have a minute. They have seconds. This scene, I think, honestly, is probably the most heart-wrenching scene for me in the entire show. Buffy just says, it's not enough time. Angel says, we don't have a choice. She says, how am I supposed to go on with my life knowing what we had, what we could have had? And he says, you won't. No one will know but me. This moment is so tender. He's carrying this burden for her, trying to reassure her and tell her, you won't feel this pain in just another minute. It will be okay. Angel says it never happened. Buffy says it did. I know it did. And she says, I felt your heartbeat. Oh my gosh. Oh my
God.
And this is a call back to you have a heart, or you don't even have a heart. It's not even beating. In that episode, I can't remember what episode it is.
It's the prom. It's when they're breaking up.
Yes. Yeah. When they were breaking up and then she just threw that at him. Oh my gosh.
The acting in this scene is
on another
insane.
Level. I think everybody knows this, but you can hear David Boreanaz actually say Sarah instead of Buffy in that moment, which just like, just kind of like, once again clear. Shows that like, and I think everyone knows, but Sarah Michelle Gellar is probably one of the biggest Angel shippers out there. She desperately wanted Buffy and Angel to be together in this moment too. And there are reports of her just absolutely like sobbing and breaking down because she wanted them to be together so badly. And I think this was David comforting her in that moment. He just kind of lost himself in that moment and called her Sarah. It almost makes it worse. So they kiss, we see the clock, and then she says, oh God, there's not enough time. I'll never forget, I'll never forget, I'll never forget. And then it goes out to white.
Her desperation, that moment, it gives me chills every time. I don't cry every time just because I know it's coming. But like when I watch like YouTubers react to it, like I just get like chills when she's like, I won't forget, I won't forget. And he just like squeezes his eyes shut. Oh, it's so sweet.
Oh, man. And I always think about Angel in this moment, because once we get to the next scene, everything is as it was before, except for Angel and how he's kind of sitting there and how he's able to keep his composure after literally, like, he literally was in that high emotional moment. And then, bam, all of a sudden he's here and having to just kind of like compose himself. And it's basically the same word for word. And it's even, I think, the same shots. Buffy says, keep our distance. And given of time, we should be able to forget. Not even knowing that she already has forgotten. So she says, well, I guess I'll go start forgetting. The Moira demon crashes in, and without hesitation, Angel takes the clock, smashes it. And Buffy kind of like, she's like, wow, that's really impressive. How did you know how to kill it? And he's like, well, I've been doing lots of reading, which, you know, true. And then she kind of like waits. And it says she's looking a little less certain about leaving so quickly. She's like, okay, I guess we've got it covered, right? I guess we did. And that's really all there is to say. And then he looks at the clock. It's frozen in time, turns back just in time to see the back of her walking away.
God.
The most painful episode ever.
Before we end, I actually have one last thing to break your guys' heart with. So the title of this episode is based off of the song I'll Remember You by Sophie Zelmani. And I don't know, Tabby and Leah, if you guys remember this, but way back at the beginning of season one, we did a spoiler section and we were on the episode Angel. And there was a moment mm-hmm. where Buffy and Angel at the very end of the episode are dancing and they have that kiss. And, you know, it's
I said that painful, during our spoiler section there.
Yeah, you talked about it. Mm-hmm. The song that's playing in the background is the song I'll Remember You.
I'll Remember.
So here are the lyrics for that song. And I don't know how they did it, but think of it from Angel's point of view. So it says, it's daybreak and you are asleep. I can hear you breathe now. Your breath is deep. But before I go, I look at you one last time. I can hear a heartbeat. Is it yours or is it mine? I look at your lips. I know how soft they can be. Did they know what they wanted the times they kissed me? In your hands that I held in mine, now they're reposing on the pillow. Will they ever miss me sometime? I'll remember you. You'll be there in my heart. I'll remember you. And that is all I can do. But I'll remember your eyes that always make me shiver. Now they are closed. And your body I could hold for an hour. It sent me to heaven with its heat and power. I'll remember you. You will be there in my heart. I'll remember you. And that is all I can do. But I'll remember.
My God.
That was the song that was playing in his episode when they were dancing. I don't know how they did it, but somehow they took I Will Remember You and put it as the title for this episode. Like, I don't even know how they did it, but
that was the first time that they, like, walked away from each other because they knew that they couldn't be together.
Well, she's like, it hurts, doesn't it?
Yeah, where the cross burns into his chest and it, like, symbolizes, oh my God. Oh, it just, oh, it hurts. Yeah.
I like that they leave that episode not with watching Buffy walk away, but it's on Angel's face and as he looks pained and then you see the cross. Like, and it's the same thing that happens here is he's watching Buffy walk away and he's feeling that same pain. Like, the writers are just genius. I don't know how they do it, but it's just crazy the connections and the symbolism and stuff. So,
yikes.
At least she has Riley to go back home to.
Oh, God. Yay.
So that was I Will Remember You. Tabby and Leah, thank you for going on this heart-rending journey as we cry and talk about Buffy and Angel together. It feels fitting that you were here, though, and I'm glad you could come, so thank you.
It feels only natural that we'd be here.
Yes, I don't think it was a surprise for anyone. And thank you, listeners, for listening along. Definitely email us and let us know your thoughts. What do you guys think of this episode? Did any of you guys watch this episode before you watched any of Buffy? What were your thoughts on Buffy? As always, guys, we will see you next time. Thanks so much for listening to Investigating Angel. If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to follow, subscribe, and review us on all platforms. You can also find us on Instagram at Investigating Angel Podcast, and you can email us at investigatingangelpodcast@gmail.com.